Get ready for two guys who can handle the truth.
I want the truth.
You can't handle the truth.
But we can. Dave Palumbo, John Romano. RxMuscle.com presents Heavy Muscle Radio.
Watch out, throw!
This hour of Heavy Muscle Radio is brought to you by ALR Industries. Visit ALRIndustries.com.
Welcome to another episode of Heavy Muscle Radio. I'm John Romano, and I'm joined, as always, by my partner in crime, Dave Palumbo. Dave, how's it going there today?
Well, just got back a little while ago from the NPC Junior USA Bodybuilding Fitness Figure and Bikini Championships down in Charleston, South Carolina.
Wow, South Carolina. Did you see Billy Guns?
Well, there's a story behind that. I wasn't going to get to it yet, but I thought that the story of the day would be that Jeff overflowed my toilet about 10 minutes ago in my house.
That's a good close second. I just say every time if I heard South Carolina, I thought of Billy Guns. Isn't that where he lives now?
No, he lives in North. Well, he's moving to North Carolina, and I got a call from. He was actually supposed to come down and visit, which was like a 500-mile ride. Now, you don't think about, North Carolina and South Carolina are not like Jersey and New York. It's pretty far.
It's a trip.
Yeah. So he was driving down with his fiance and her child Trey to see the show. He came last year. And I was kind of looking forward to seeing him. I haven't seen him in a long time, and I figured I'd get a nice interview with him, and we'd go to Waffle House and talk about old times. But I got a text message from him about 12 at night the day before the show, and he said, I only have like 400 miles to go or something like that. I'm working on 2 hours sleep. I said, all right, well, be careful. I'll see you in the morning. At about, I'd say, 9 a.m., I get another text message from him. I'm not coming. I said, and he's like, I almost got arrested. So evidently he got pulled over, driving while he was driving. I guess they see a New York plate driving in South Carolina at 4 a.m. in the morning, and they're like, what, with a kid and a woman in the car that's not his wife, it looks like a cover, I guess. Like, it could be transporting drugs, I guess. Mm-hmm. So they pull him over for supposedly speeding, they say, we want to search your trunk. Now, Billy obviously is a little more street smart than we give most people credit for, because he's like, I don't feel comfortable with that because, I'm moving and I have a lot of personal stuff in there, and I don't think there's any reason for you to be looking in my trunk. So, of course, they bring like 10 more cop cars, and the sergeant comes out and they try to start intimidating him. And, Billy, one thing about Billy, I will say, he gets like really like, obstinate when people start to like interrogate him. So right. He wasn't doing anything. So somehow he gets his lawyer on the phone like at 4 a.m. in the morning. I'm sure this guy was thrilled, and he puts him on with the sergeant, and they're like, we want to search his trunk. They're like, and his lawyer said, well, what did you pull him over for? Evidently, he was doing 65 in like a 55 or something like that. It was 60 in a 55. It was ridiculous. Right. And so I guess the lawyer said, well, what else you got on him? What's your probable cause? They're like, well, he's driving in the middle of the night. It doesn't look good. And so his lawyer said, well, if you open his trunk without his permission, we're going to sue you. And they had to let him go. But he was there till like 7:30 in the morning.
Jeez. Well, that's all of that. All of those tactics are contained in Rick Collins' book, Legal Muscle.
Billy was smart.
So, yep. I know Billy read the book. So
he was exhausted. So he never made it down. He checked into a hotel, I guess, wherever he was, and they slept. And, the next day they went back.
So he never showed.
Never showed. Ugh. But I give him a pass on that one, for that little bit.
Yeah, that's a good pass.
But this kind of segues right into our other top story of the day, which is Ronnie Coleman getting arrested.
Yes, boy, that was a shocker. And in fact, I couldn't wait to call Ronnie to see what the deal was after I saw we had to confirm the rumor, and we did once the news reports came out in the Dallas Morning News. And in fact, Ronnie even told me that it was on the TV news
there,
by him locally.
That's what happened. One of my little informants over there in Texas emailed me. Or text messaged me, I think. I just got back from the night show, and he said, I know you guys like breaking news, and I heard on the news that Ronnie was arrested, and I called a couple friends of mine down in the precinct, and they said that he was impersonating a police officer. I'm like, but he is one. So that's when I called you and said, John, find out what happened,
Yeah. Yeah, well, I called Ronnie, and it's the most ludicrous story. I mean, it is just nuts. Yeah. And we know Ronnie. Ronnie's a good friend of ours, and you know we know what kind of guy he is. He's just a good guy. And when a good guy as good as Ronnie is accused of something so horrendous, it messes with him big time, you know. Yeah. And I know he's in shock over this whole thing.
Yeah, no, I know he is. Well, we're going to get him on the show a little later. You know, I'm glad that he was willing to talk about it. You know, I know he's got to be upset. And, you know, it's kind of like an embarrassment, John, a little bit. You know, it's kind of like, you know, you're in a club and you kind of like go on to bigger and better things. And then you want to come back and hang out with your friends in the club. And they're like, screw you, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. However, with police officers, especially beat cops, I mean, you guys are guys that have put your lives on the line together, and there's a brotherhood there. I mean, in New York, I think they call it the Blue Shield. I mean, it's tough. I mean, you can't break that. Mm. And I mean, for a fellow officer who knew Ronnie was a cop, Ronnie said that the cop knew who he was. He knew he was a cop.
Right.
That he could possibly, you know, read enough into that thing to actually put handcuffs on Ronnie Coleman and bring him to jail.
Yeah. You know, this guy had it in for him. I'm telling you, he probably didn't. He thought Ronnie might have been cocky or something like that. Or, you know, who does he think he is? 8-time Mr. Olympia, flashing a badge. He's not working a full time job. You know, one of those guys, just like mad at the world for whatever he doesn't like about his own life.
Sure, there's tons of those, especially in a little, you know, hick town outside of Arlington. So,
but you get, doesn't, I think Diego gets arrested a lot like that too, doesn't he?
Every day.
Because he's Colombian, right?
I'm Colombian, and they pull me over because I have my steak to bring to you.
They say, yeah, that's why the food steak is always cooked.
Illegal steak while driving.
I thought that's why the food was cold last time, and he got pulled over.
Yes.
It was cold because he tried to make it on his engine on the way here, and it didn't heat up the right way.
Actually, I think the killer bees got to it. That's what the problem was.
And the killer tomatoes.
Speaking of killer bees, Dave.
Yes.
You know, we were talking about this the other day. I forgot the context of the conversation, but it had to do with how, you know, these plagues.
It had to do with my moths in my house, and then the raspberry ants.
Then the raspberry ants, right. So periodically throughout our lives.
It all started with the bed bugs about a couple months back, if you remember. You know.
That's true. Yeah. That's true.
Was that Bill's bed bugs?
When Bill Comstock was inundated with bed bugs, yeah.
And he spent the night standing on a chair.
Yeah.
So, as we've discussed during those couple of times, we have had bared witness to these sort of, you know, impending plagues that are going to come and wipe out the earth. And the one that really bothered you and I growing up were the killer bees that were making their way up from South America. You know,
from
Colombia. Diego's fault.
From Diego's company. He was breeding them in his backyard for honey, and they just got out of control.
We
eat the honey.
The honey bees and the honey tomatoes.
In the honeymoon.
Yeah.
I vividly remember the we were all had such great hope that the bees were not going to make it over the Panama Canal, and then that was going to stop them. And then a whole doom fell over everybody when they found out that no, they made it across the Panama Canal.
They're in Florida.
So now this morning in Lower Manhattan there was a GameStop video game store that had suddenly become inundated, the entrance, with a swarm of bees. A swarm of bees, and we don't know if they're killer bees. I don't think they were killer bees. Okay. But this huge swarm of bees
would have been a better story if they were killer bees.
Much better story. But still, I think the coincidence is worthy of disclosing the story. This big, huge, gigantic swarm of bees descended upon GameStop and landed on the door and the front window and everything, and it trapped inside a whole store full of people. They were too afraid to leave. They were in there for like 2.5 hours. The police came. They put a blockade around the place, and it took like over 2 hours for... It was actually a good Samaritan that knew how knew how to deal with bees.
His name was Diego. He's the beekeeper. Diego, aren't you a beekeeper?
I keep bees and cockroaches. Or cucarachas, as we say.
Cucarachas.
And flies.
Flies.
But I could just imagine, Dave, if you and I had been in that video store, video game store, and the bees came and kept us from leaving, or the nightmare thoughts of our childhood would have probably ruled the day.
I know this is a dumb question and all, but what about the back door?
I do not take it from the back. Oh, sorry.
I mean, could they have left through the back door, John?
Maybe they don't let anybody back there. I don't know. I mean, there's some rules in these stores that are just absolutely nuts. I was in a shoe store one time in Lower Manhattan when Max was about 2 years old, and he had to use the bathroom. You know, he was out of diapers. He had to use the bathroom. Little tiny kid, he's standing there stomping his feet, jumping up and down on his feet.
They won't let you use it.
Well, they wouldn't let me use the bathroom.
They pretend they don't have one. I hate when they say we don't have one.
I go, bullshit, you don't have one. What do you mean? You stand in here for 10 hours a day and don't use the bathroom? Little tiny baby kid, they won't let you use the bathroom.
No, I know. I hate that crap.
So I don't imagine it would be at all unbelievable that they wouldn't let the trapped patrons use the back door. Right.
No, yeah, true. So they kept them trapped with the bees and the customer sewer or anything like that?
It's too soon to tell. I mean, it only happened today. But, right. I mean, some good Samaritan was able to corral all these bees with some kind of makeshift cardboard box thing and get them into a garbage bag and save the day.
Really? Yeah. It's always good to have some skills, people with skills, right? Didn't Napoleon Dynamite say that? Chicks love skills.
Chicks like love mad skills.
They love
skills.
He
said vote for Pedro.
No, but he said
vote for Diego.
Diego. We should have shirts made up. Vote for Diego.
Vote for Diego.
Pedro's my cousin.
You know, I got to welcome Sean Andrews into the studio now, too. He's sitting here with us. He spent the whole weekend with us. Me, Jeff, and Sean were kind of like the dynamic trio over there in Charleston.
What's up,
Drew?
What's happening?
What's up?
Sean, we came back. We took like a 8 o'clock in the morning flight, which means we had to get up at 6, and went to bed at 4:30. So, you know, we got back here, and Jeff went to sleep, and I went to sleep, and Colette went to sleep, and Sean went to the gym.
Sean does not sleep. I think he's allergic to sheets.
Yeah, I think so. Something like that.
Sleeping makes me tired.
Sorry, but before, you know, we get too much further on with the story, I, who stayed home and manned the boards all weekend, want to commend you guys for the amazing coverage that you gave. I think Mike Liberatore guest posed, and like 3 seconds later, the video was up on our site. It was incredible.
That was complimentary of Jeff's idea.
Well, Jeff did a great job. And Sean, I mean, play-by-play, Dave's play-by-play, the photos, the photo galleries, the paparazzi. I mean, you guys got it all up way before everybody else.
Yeah, we got it up, and it's still going up. I got a lot of video content still have not gone up. All the interviews, the post-show interviews, because, you know, we came back here and we basically did this. We got the wrap-up up last night, and that's up online, and I think people really enjoyed the coverage because, you know, that's not as covered a show as the Junior Nationals is. It doesn't get the love that show gets. So I really enjoy going to that show. Trey Bennett opens up his arms, basically, and says, guys, whatever you want, you know, he gave us, you know, and not only does Trey take care of us, you know, he really has a van. The hotel van will actually drive you anywhere you want, within reason, obviously, to the gym. So we had access to go to the gym, and I actually did a training video with Jen Cowan, who won that show last year as a lightweight. Now she's powerlifting, so I did her workout of her deadlifting 405, and I'm going to put that up pretty soon. She had some trouble making that one, but I mean, considering the girl weighs 140 pounds, it was a pretty impressive lift.
Well, now, I'm going to take a sort of really radical segue from there. Because since you brought up a woman powerlifting, she's not as, but I guess 140 is not that big. But
no, she's tiny.
Very strong, though. Okay. Yeah. You know, we have a great article about a member of our board named Sister Steele.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's a very racy piece. It talks all about, you know, her fetish and mistress-isms and some of the things that she does. I personally found that article fascinating. Someone else called me today and told me that they were offended by it, and they felt that it detracted from what bodybuilding is. And I just wanted to put that out there and get your opinion on that, Dave.
I think that we're about all walks of life. I mean, we're pretty open on this, not only the show, but in the whole website. I think that anyone involved in this iron sport, whatever segment of the population they're in, I think is worthy of reporting about. I got an email, I think she sent it to you also, from another woman named Belinda, who loved the article. And she liked it so much, she wanted us to consider accepting her photos and her profile for a future interview. So,
yeah.
I don't agree with that. I think, you know, look, everyone's always offended by everything. They're offended by our radio show. I'm sure there's people constantly, you know, emailing me every day about, I didn't like that John said this about that, and you're racist, and you're this, and you're that, and you hate fat people. We hate everyone equally, you know?
But the funny thing is, we don't hate anybody.
No.
My argument to my friend was that we treat bodybuilding as a culture. Not necessarily. I think the sport resides within the culture,
sure.
But the culture itself encompasses, you know, not only mistresses and dominatrix, but also lawyers and doctors and chiropractors and clinicians and scientists and everybody.
Yeah.
You know, and the common ground is evinced probably by the WAC Pack is that the content of the show itself has very little to do with bodybuilding, but all of us are bodybuilders.
It's about entertainment.
Right. It's cultural. It's the cultural aspect of what we practice
is what we cover, is what we promote.
So I'm glad we have the Sister Steels of the world.
Yeah. Well, you know, and on that same note, I mean, if you want to segue even a little more, we could talk about Britt Miller, who's, you know, getting ready for the USA Championship. She's the top NPC national competitor, probably win her pro card this year. It was down in Myrtle Beach the other day, and she saw a notice up on the boards about, you know, they're having a tough man competition, women's tough man, in the gym the next day, or in some arena the next day, and she entered it on one day's notice. No training, nothing. She knocks out four girls in the first round and wins like $2,500. You know, so, I mean, look, these girls are athletes as well as, you know, bodybuilders, you know. I know it sounds kind of like they should be the same thing, but they're not. You know, athleticism is almost sometimes different than bodybuilding, you know, and it's good to know that there's a lot of variability in what these women can do, and I think that's what makes them interesting.
Yeah, it does. And I find, Dave, that the women espouse more of the physicality than the men actually do. I mean, I've noticed that a lot of women are really, you know, versatile in their athleticism, where guys tend to be more focused on, you know, actually bodybuilding or strongman, right, or powerlifting. They're really not that multifaceted. Shelley Beatty, for example, was a, you know, my ex was a world class bodybuilder, third place in the Miss Olympia. She was also American Gladiator, set all kinds of records on that show. She raced on America Cube, the all women's sailing team. She was an avid kayaker, rock climber, bicyclist, rollerblader. She did everything. You know, and it's rare to find a male bodybuilder that's as multifaceted as in a sports.
Well, I think the male bodybuilders get a lot more recognition, so the women have to try harder. That's just my, you know,
perhaps
my insight into that. Well, a little later in the show, we're going to have the New York badass Phil Baroni on the show, who actually started his fighting career doing a tough man on one day's notice, and I'll mention that when he gets on the show a little later. But for now, I got Sean here in the studio specifically to talk about the Junior USA that took place this past weekend down in Charleston, South Carolina. Once again, I mentioned that Trey Bennett was the promoter. Mike Liberatore guest posed on stage, and I got to tell you, it was a great show. There was about 235, 240 competitors in the show, mostly a lot of women, you know, because they give out pro cards in the bikini. They give two figure pro cards, and they give a fitness pro card. And I guess before I talk about the men, let's just announce who got those pro cards. Andrea Watson won the figure overall. Jennifer Strobo took the second pro card in figure. So those girls are now IFBB pros. In the fitness competition, Sandy Stewart, driving out on stage in a little Barbie doll Mustang during her routine, she won the fitness overall, got her pro card. She's been trying for like 8 years. So that was, you know, She really showed that persistence pays off. And in the bikini, which was, I think, Sean, myself, and Jeff, the producer's favorite division, Chelsea Montez, was a real little cutie, won the overall there. And Stacy Oster, who is now engaged to Texas chairman Lee Thompson, she won the second pro card. So the bikini division is officially underway, John. They have two new pros. I assume they're going to probably wait till next year to start a pro division. But like I said, and like Sean, you can chime in when you want. I really enjoyed this division a lot.
It was so much fun. Just watching it, it really showed how boring Figure is, actually.
You know what it was, John? The bikini is so quick, the way they judge it, because it's only a front and rear stance, and they kind of let them have a little attitude and shake their booties a little bit. And it's like so quick that it's painless, really. And the girls are hot, so it's like you don't really mind watching.
Now, yeah, I was watching Sean's play-by-play of I guess it was Figure, and it was there were like no call-outs. What was going on with that, Sean?
Yeah, they were in the first. I think in the first class and the last class, they had probably 10 to 15 girls, and they just brought them all out in a line, spun them around 4 times, and sent them off the stage. But it's hard to tell what the hell's going on with Figure. We don't know what they're looking for, what wins, what loses.
It's so stiff, John, now that it's like it's so boring because they don't do anything on stage. They don't pose. They're not even allowed to like, you know, flare their lats anymore. So they just kind of go up there and stand like in this like dreary-eyed like death stare. And then the judges judge them. At least the bikini girls go up there and they shake their ass a little bit. They kind of walk and sashay across the stage. You know, they're allowed to. They don't even want them to wear Figure suits. They wear their own little off-the-rack bikinis. I mean, really hot. It's like a hot body contest.
Wow. But and that's Figure.
That's bikini I'm talking about.
That's bikini.
I said
okay.
Figure is boring as hell.
Now, so you're saying bikini is more entertaining than Figure.
Much more, and it's quicker too.
That's because we get it. We know what we're looking for in bikini.
Right, yeah, they want hot girls. That's what they want, you know. The fitness was entertaining because you get to watch the routines, you know, at least. But Figure has become in my mind the most boring category.
What do you think they can do to spice it up? I mean, I find it is almost like a cattle call. I mean, they come out and they go back. I mean, it's like
Let them hit a front double bicep or something like that.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Like hit a couple poses. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Something.
Spruce it up a little bit.
They could start by letting us know what the judging criteria is. That would probably help.
You know what? They kind of have a criteria. You kind of know what they're looking for. If the girl doesn't have a small waist, she shouldn't even do Figure because you're screwed. There's no way you can compensate for a lack of a small waist in Figure. It just won't happen.
Right.
You can't be
straight up and down.
Yeah, well, it's not even that. If you don't have a small waist, you should just go into bodybuilding.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's because you can at least compensate with a little more muscle in the upper body, you know?
You know, it's so funny. It's not funny. It's perplexing. They have this conundrum with the women. I mean, look at the broad spectrum of women's physiques you have, and you still have problems. You've got bodybuilders. Okay, now you've got fitness and Figure. Let's leave fitness out of it because at least they have the routines, and those routines can certainly be dynamic enough to warrant, you know, the interest. But as far as Figure goes, there's no real rhyme or reason to the competition. You couldn't explain it to somebody off the street, like, this is what you're looking for.
Right.
What you just said, if you don't have a small waist, you might as well go into bodybuilding. But that creates another problem, because if you're not genetically predisposed to having big muscles, you're still going to be lost.
Right.
You can't go to bikini because you need to have, you know, big tits, a small waist, a nice ass to be a bikini girl and beautiful on top of that. I mean, out of 4 different categories of women competitors, you still have problems. Men have 1 shot. Well, 2 now. You have big bodybuilders and under 202 bodybuilders. Mm-hmm. Beyond that, you're stuck.
I like the fact that they did away with the one-piece round, though. It really speeds up the whole process as well.
They should let those Figure girls hit some poses. I mean, this it's just ridiculous.
Yeah, they might. Who knows? You know, the sport's evolving. I wouldn't be surprised if they do hit a few poses down the road. They do it in Europe, so
Yeah, they do in Europe. I mean, you know, model turns, something.
I don't want to see any more model turns. I want to see if they're not going to let him hit a front double bicep pose, then they should just don't do anything more because it'll take
you. Or sort of an amended kind of, you know, mandatory pose, you know, or maybe a, you know, maybe not seven poses, but
no,
maybe,
well, they
know,
do two open-handed poses. I think they do like a couple, like a side chest and a front double by, a rear double by.
Yeah, something girly, you know.
Well, the women's bodybuilding was won by Gail Auerbach, who won the middleweight class and the open overall. And, you know, she was real thrilled. She actually is one of my clients, Sean. She's a first grade teacher, I believe. And you mentioned having a teacher like that. I never had a teacher that looked like that. With like arms and ripped arms and legs and stuff.
Oh,
like.
Man.
Another testament to the failures of the keto diet.
Yeah, right. Yeah, she was a keto. Yeah, you know what? Isaac Hines was interviewing me and he said that, you know, he heard a lot of people talking shit about the fact that women bodybuilders can't get in shape using a keto diet. And he's like, what do you have to say to that? I said, well, talk to Gail Auerbach. You know, she won the women's overall. Actually, that was 2 years in a row because Jen Cowan won the year before that as well.
All your clients.
Yeah. And Jen Cowan was natural too on top of that. So, you know, look, the women's category was not as deep as I would have liked to see at this show because I really think this is a good intro show. For some reason, all these women bodybuilders go right to the nationals. I don't know what it is, why they don't think they need to have a stepping stone there, but this is a great first show, a first national show for a person to get exposure that he needs. And we're going to move on to the men's category now, and case in point, you know, without going in order, I'd like to just talk about the middleweight winner, Jason Wynn, who is 22 years old, John. This kid is phenomenal. Another client of mine. And, he looked like a little Michael Liberatore on stage.
Really?
Yes, yeah, so Sean, what did you think of Jason?
Yeah, Tim, he was my favorite bodybuilder in the show. Just had the whole package.
Wow.
Dense muscle, best condition of the show. He had everything.
Good kid, what too.
About that?
Good kid.
What about that guy, Rocky?
Yeah, Rocky did well, too. Rocky's not quite as young as Jason is. Rocky took third in the light heavyweight class. And he really did some good damage, too. You know, he was a guy that, like, no one was talking about a couple of years ago. And he won the New England, the Jay Cutler Classic a couple weeks ago. Came in. This guy's a maniac too. He's a bartender, and his wife is doesn't have her citizenship papers yet, and she didn't have an ID card to fly with. He drove from Boston to South Carolina himself. He's like a Sean guy. He doesn't sleep. He drove like 18 hours or something like that because they hit traffic. And he was fine. He's like, yeah, I'm good. I'm good to go. I said, aren't you tired? He's like, no, I'm good. Good. So, yeah, Rocky did good. But, yeah, I think the talk of the show is definitely was the light heavyweight winner, Darren Glenn, who is a local guy. And they call him Hollywood. That's his middle name, his like, nickname. Because Sean and I were asking him, you know, how'd you get that nickname? And I guess when he first started training, he was like another Dexter Jackson. He was like 130 pounds. He goes to the gym, all oiled up, do-rags on, and, you know, the whole bodybuilder get up. And they're like, what are you, from Hollywood? So he got that name, and it just stuck. And now, you know, now he's a, you know, big, you know, 194-pound, you know, light heavyweight. And he moved up from middleweight last year. And, you know, while the guy can be a little tighter in the glutes and hamstrings, you know, he was a standout in this show, definitely.
Wow.
Yeah, he's got a great package, but the conditioning leaves a little to be desired.
Yeah, a lot of people were a little disturbed with the fact that he wasn't quite as conditioned from behind as some of the other guys. But, you know, from the front and sides, the guy was very, very dominant. And if he dials it in, you know, at the Nationals, if that's what he decides to do at the end of the year, I think the guy can do some damage in the light heavyweight class.
He's definitely got a great body. It's just a matter of if he puts in the time to get conditioned. You should try that keto diet.
Yeah, he loses muscle.
He'll lose all his muscle.
Very stringy legs.
Yeah, no Mr. Olympia ever has followed a keto diet.
Now, Mike Davies, who, you know, is usually known for training, you know, figure and fitness girls, he actually trained Joshua Bergeron, who won the heavyweight class, who was clearly dominantly won that class. Not that he was that spectacular. I mean, he wasn't like, because if he was, he would have won the overall. But the guy just had good balance, great conditioning, good looking guy, and the rest of the heavyweights stunk, to tell you the truth. And not that they
really?
Their physique stunk, yeah. That no one was in shape, right, Sean? There was one guy.
That was the weakest class there. We didn't really pay much attention to it because he was the clear winner. He wasn't that impressive when he walked down on stage. He started posing. He was definitely in shape. He earned it.
I mean, to give you an idea of the heavyweights, Sean Young, who won the Metropolitan's Masters overall, who the guy, I don't know if you remember the interview I did with him, he told me he was a crack addict for like 10 years. This guy came to this show and took third in the heavyweights, you know, and his leg development is not up to snuff, but the guy was shredded. So really, I mean, you didn't have the quality of competitor that you normally have at a national level show like this. So Josh kind of really dominated that lineup, you know, and you know what? I wouldn't have had a problem with him winning the overall. He just, you know, still needs to bring up his parts. He could probably gain another 5 to 10 pounds and still look good on his physique.
He didn't have that wow factor that that Darum had.
Yeah, Darum had more of a wow factor. And in the super heavyweight class, probably the worst decision of the whole show was when Myron Jackson was relegated to second and Robert Kalin was given first place. I don't know what these judges were looking at. And I talked to Weinberger after, and he actually liked Myron Jackson. He said he had him. This guy is phenomenal. He's got a tiny waist. He's a tall guy. He had striated glutes, you know, real nice physique. If you go online, John, take a look at the pictures, you'll see what I'm talking about. This guy, you know, and that's not taking anything away from Robert Kalin, because he was in condition, the guy, and he had some muscle on his body. But this Myron Jackson just had a beautiful flowing physique. And I really he was my prediction for winning the overall, to tell you the truth.
We saw him at the weigh-in, and he looked unbelievable. We all thought he'd be the easy winner.
Yeah, it was almost like they purposely didn't let him win the class, because had he won the class and gone up against Glenn in the overall, there may have been a discrepancy, or it may have been close. It kind of like Glenn was the favorite son there. They really were looking to give this guy the title. Which, you know, may or may not be true. But, you know, not like I said, not taking away anything from Glenn. He knows what he's got to do. He knows he's got to take those glutes and those hamstrings and get them shredded. If he was, he would have won the show hands down, even in my mind, you know. But given who was up there in that overall, Glenn deserved it. And, you know, he's a real nice guy. We talked to him. We interviewed him. I'll be putting the interview up a little later. And I think that he's going to definitely be a future star in the NPC.
Now, how do you think this is going to stack up for him when it comes time to turn pro?
Well, I think if he can get himself in shape, and not coast on the fact that he's got good, you know, he's got good muscle bellies and he looks good from the front, I think he could be dangerous. I think that if he does the Nationals this year, he could be a dangerous guy against like a Brandon Ray, unless Brandon's going to do the USA. I don't know what his goals, what he's looking to do. He's a guy that's got a lot of dense muscle. You know what he looks like? He looks exactly like a Johnny Stewart. And a matter of fact, Johnny Stewart is his trainer. He poses like him. He's got a very similar physique to him. That thick, dense muscle, you know, that you just, there's not like a millimeter that's missing any kind of muscle. There's no gap in his physique anywhere.
Wow.
So, freak, you know, a freak in the making, that's for sure.
Maybe, you know, things are looking to a point where, you know, we've been talking many, many times about how there hasn't been an era quite like the 90s for producing, you know, great bodybuilders. Mm. It seems that we're pulling out of that, because if you look over the last, you know, year or so, there's been a lot of great bodybuilders coming up.
True. You know, and it only takes, you know, a handful of them. You get three or four really, really good ones. You know, right now you got, if you're talking about youth in the sport, you got Phil Heath, you got Evan Santapani. You know, those two guys alone will probably carry the sport into the next decade. And, you know, who else will be there? You know, we interviewed Trey Brewer, who's holding about 285, 287, and he's pretty lean, you know, much leaner than he normally is in the offseason. He's waiting to the Nationals. This guy is a guy who could possibly, you know, sneak in there and win a pro card this year. He's only 22. Or 20, I think he's 22 still, or 23. Right. I mean, that's really, really young still. You know, you got a guy like Jason Wynn in the middleweights who's 22. So you're right. I mean, there are a lot of young guys coming up in the sport. We got Sean Andrews here. He's only 27.
Yeah, a very youthful 27.
He doesn't sleep, but he's training his balls off, so you never know where he's going to be in a couple of years.
Imagine if he slept and got the rest he needed. He'd probably explode.
Exactly. You know, the funniest thing happened. We went to the Waffle House after the show is over, because nothing's open in South Carolina after 10 o'clock except IHOP and the Waffle House. Now, having gone to this show 4 or 5 years in a row already, I know that everyone routinely goes to IHOP. So I said, look, guys, we're going to go to Waffle House and no one's going to be there. And of course, no one, Colette's like yelling and screaming at me because she has to argue about everything with me. of course, we get there. And there's no one there. So we took over the whole Waffle House, which is not very big. It's like kind of like being in a trailer park, trailer. We sat down and we ate, and then we had to walk back because the van wouldn't come pick us up. It's only about maybe 3/4 of a mile walk, which I figure it's not bad after eating, 8 whole eggs, a double order of grits and some cinnamon raisin toast. So got to walk that thing off. Of course, while we're walking, it starts pouring. So we have to run for this like overhang. We're like in the middle of bumfuck, South Carolina, standing with an overhang, where we have all our computer bags and cameras with us. And we're just like, how's this happening? How are we going to get back? And luckily, in the South, you live out there, it doesn't rain very long there. So,
right.
We had some serious meals at the Waffle House, as the RX Muscle fans are soon going to find out.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I made Sean video me giving the merits of a Waffle House. Post contest meal, I guess you could say.
Both Mike and I probably won't eat for the next week after having Dave break our balls all weekend.
Yeah, I was. Michael Liberatore is probably a worse eater than Sean.
Really?
That's why he doesn't grow. I figured it out. I trained him during back. He was like ready to like. He was laying on, right, Jeff? He was laying on the ground.
Yeah, hey, I don't think his cardiovascular system could handle that. He was literally laying down between sets. It was pretty funny.
Yeah, he was so nauseous. So we pull up to McDonald's, right, after the workout. And, Sean and I go in there, and Jeff, and we're doing our usual, 25 burgers and fries and this and that. Liberatore is like, get me a chocolate shake. That's what the kid eats. A chocolate shake. That was his post-workout recovery drink.
Actually, that's pretty good. It's got, it'll spike his insulin. It's got a little protein in there.
It's got 3 grams of... So he goes to Waffle House. He orders... I said, how many eggs did you order? I ordered 8. Sean ate 8 whole eggs. Mike had like 2 scrambled eggs, with like a piece of bacon.
Wow.
Kid doesn't eat.
I heard he was big as a house because he was eating carbs. That was the last... the last thing I heard.
He's eating wood chips is what he's eating, like the raspberry Ansar.
Wow.
Yeah, we got to get him to eat more. That's his problem. He gets distracted. He's not an eater. He's like, what can I take to make me eat? I said, eating is not always a pleasure. That's what these guys don't realize. If you want to gain weight out there, okay, and you're a big guy already, you got to realize and put aside taste and say to yourself, eating is not always a pleasure. It's a job. Just like you got to go to the gym 6 times a week, or you got to brush your teeth twice a day. You got to eat your whatever it is. For Liberatore, we got him eating eight meals a day. You got to eat those 8 meals. You miss any of those, or you don't eat enough food at those 8 meals. Guess what? You wasted a whole week for yourself.
Yeah,
and that's just a fact.
Mike did look pretty good on stage in his little guest posing appearance there. So he's far from fat. He could definitely stand to eat a little more and pack on some pounds.
Yeah, I mean, he's still lean because he doesn't eat enough.
Well, he's not a very tall guy, so he can, I mean, if he got really overly huge, he'd look pretty bad. So I mean,
he's got good aesthetics. He's got a small waist. He's got broad shoulders. If he could pack on, what I told him is I wanted him to get up to about 260. If he can get up to he's about 245 now. If he can get up to 260 and diet down to, 225, 230, that would be about a 10-15 pound increase from when he won the Nationals. Now he's going to be a dangerous competitor,
Now, are you still going to be allowed to do his diet?
As far as I know, I am. Oh. He hasn't fired me yet, so.
I bet that'll be interesting to see how it plays out moving forward.
Yeah, we'll worry about it. Well, we got a great show, John. We have a very interesting panel. We have Scott Conley on, who's going to talk a little bit about the Sports Illustrated article that he was quoted in. And then we have the New York badass Phil Baroni on a little later. And then after that, I think we have Ronnie Coleman on. He's going to talk about getting arrested. So this is kind of like a nice diversity in the show. And I want to thank, personally, on the air, from the bottom of my heart, I want to thank Jeff, the producer, and Sean Andrews for making this weekend really, really, really excellent, because without their hard work and dedication, we would never have gotten those pictures up and all the content up and all the video we did. And one other person I want to thank, Nick Palladino, who's our guy in the sky, so to speak. He was home tagging pictures for us and helping us also with the content. So thanks a lot, guys.
And John Romano for manning the boards.
Manning
the boards.
Well, MD had their own guy manning the boards, so we had to have a comparable compatriot.
Exactly.
Thank you, John Romano.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
And thank you, Diego, yeah, for your support of our eating and of the show.
I will support you until I die or you die.
All right, John, we're going to go to break. When we come back, we'll have our first guest, and he's going to be a good one.
This is Heavy Muscle Radio, only on RxMuscle.com. ALR Industries. ALR Industries products are backed by 3 decades of experience in the science and lifelong dedication to bodybuilding from its founder, Arthur L. Ray. In 2001, ALR Industries was created to give the hardcore bodybuilder the edge you need to build the perfect beast. Hyperdrive 3.0 is a synergistic blend of fat-burning herbs which yields the most potent legally available formula on the market today. Hyperdrive 3.0 will burn fat, control your appetite, improve your mood and focus, and give you an energy boost you've never experienced. Restore blocks estrogen, enhances libido, and optimizes free testosterone. You'll be stronger, recover faster, and build muscle like never before. Then, fuel your workouts with the great-tasting and energy-enhancing Hyper Shot. Hyper Shot will boost your athletic performance to new levels, allowing you to train harder, improve your endurance, and get the most out of your time in the gym. Whining is not an option for those who refuse to accept mediocrity. Visit ALRindustries.com today. When you hit the gym, you set in motion a fundamental set of molecular activation signals and cellular growth mechanisms that deliver your desired gains in mass and strength. The magnitude of those processes, as well as how efficiently your muscles recover force production, can dramatically affect your net progress in a training cycle. Progenics protein supplements interact precisely and powerfully to amplify these pathways to produce enhanced growth responses of 100% or more compared to conventional whey protein sources. And they facilitate full recovery of force production in just 6 hours following the most grueling workout, allowing you to train harder, more frequently, for more dramatic gains. Experience the exclusive metabolic advantage available from Nature's Toolbox and Dr. Scott Connolly, renowned pioneer in applied dairy science and inventor of the original Metrex product. Go to ProgenicsSRG.com and use the code NBR801 to get 10% off the purchase of any single Progenics product. RxMuscle.com. Now you have a place to turn when you want the truth on bodybuilding, diet, and exercise, up-to-the-minute news, and more. Visit the RxMuscle.com forums featuring celebrity Q&As with IFBB professional athletes, top amateurs, and the brightest minds in the industry. Listen to our weekly radio shows, including Heavy Muscle Radio, Muscle Girls Inc., After Hours, and more. Contest coverage, videos, even our own social networking site, RX Muscle Place. Visit RxMuscle.com. Heavy Muscle Radio.
Hi, this is Lou Ferrigno, the Incredible Hulk. You are listening to Heavy Muscle Radio with John Romano and Dave Palumbo, and keep listening, the best show on the air.
This hour of Heavy Muscle Radio is brought to you by ALR Industries. Visit ALRindustries.com.
Welcome back to Heavy Muscle Radio. I'm Dave Palumbo here with John Romano and Sean Andros and Jeff, the producer, in the studio here. And before we get to our first guest, John, I want to thank Arthur L. Ray and ALR Industries for all his great products, support of the show. We talked to the King on the phone the other day, and he's doing as good as ever, and he's psyched for he's really launching a lot of marketing for his products in the coming months, right, John?
Yeah, actually, and he's making us a big part of that. He really likes the radio show and the all of the attention that our listeners have been giving his products, especially on our boards and the forum where Arthur answers, you know, everybody's questions personally regarding his products and how you use them and what you can expect and what's in them and just about anything. And, you know, we're all anxiously anticipating the arrival of Poison and Comatose. And I know I got my bottle of Pornstar the other day, and I'm just dying to try it out.
You got to have a girlfriend first. Well, I guess not. You know, I used to have this friend, Ray. He's the guy who always revs his motorcycle in front of my house. He used to take Viagra or Cialis, and then he would just go buy a couple porn movies and go home and use them. So you might want to try it. Just tell us how it works out.
I've had enough, you know, monoisms in my relationships lately. I'm looking forward to having more people present.
Did you find a house out here yet?
Actually, interesting you bring that up. I have, I guess the word has gotten out that Romano is moving to Long Island, and everybody's looking.
Oh, good.
I have our good friend, you know, Ron Norman's wife, Nancy, is actively pursuing my my new housing situations. She's been extremely helpful to me, mainly because she really knows the area, the school districts, and all of that, right, which are really important. Another friend of mine is a mortgage broker who used to live here, who now lives in Melville. Lives in Whitestone and works in Melville, and right, he knows, you know, in the mortgage business, he's running across people all the time with houses for rent. In fact, I got him looking, and a friend of my parents is in the area looking, my cousin is in the area looking, and yeah, I have, you know, people all over the place are coming out of the woodwork looking for places for us to live.
All right, well, so, let us know. We got to get you up here, and I think you got a month, you know, because... I'm happy to announce that JoJo Energy Drink has officially signed on. I know I've been teasing us and mentioning them the last few weeks. They are now the official energy drink of Heavy Muscle Radio and all of RX Muscle for that matter. And they will be coming on and helping us build out this TV studio here so that we can get this TV show underway. And we can't do the TV show, John, unless you're living here in New York. So,
well, Dave, I sold my house, so I have to be out of here July 1st. So.
Good.
Like it or not, if I don't have a place to live, I'm moving in to your house. So
wouldn't be the first person that moved in. So
you have plenty of rooms there.
You could stay with Diego, probably.
You have rooms you don't even go in.
Sean has lived there for a little while. I think Jeff stayed in there Billy Gunn's lived there for about
Billy
3 weeks.
Gunn's,
yeah,
lived there. Yeah.
Firestone lived here for a few weeks.
Wow.
So
everyone.
Yeah, and Max loves Colette. I mean, Colette loves Max. So.
And Max loves Colette. You better watch out, Dave.
I know. He's getting getting to that age, too.
About 8-9 more years, you might have competition.
He'll be pushing us all around in wheelchairs, that's for sure.
He'll be driving us to wheelchairs.
That's right. That's right. Or maybe they'll have like levitating ones by then. Who knows?
Yeah, hopefully.
All right, I'd like to welcome our next guest returning to this show probably for about the 10th time now. Our good friend, Dr. Scott Connolly. Welcome back, Scott.
Hey, guys. How are you doing?
Great.
Great. How are you?
Good.
Now, I had to get you back because, you know, you're very usually pretty low-key in the press lately. And then all of a sudden, I read this Sports Illustrated article that was kind of slamming the industry a little bit, that is the supplement industry. And I saw them interviewing you a little bit in there, and you had a couple words to say. How did that come about as far as Sports Illustrated contacting you?
Well, actually, you know, I got an email out of the blue from one of the writers. So I think it was a two-author type piece, and one of the authors emailed me and told me that he was going to do an article on supplements and would like to interview me. And you know, I said sure. And my thinking was that it was going to be sort of one of these abbreviated over the phone type things. But in point of fact, he wanted a real in-depth, face-to-face interview. So I acquiesced in that, and we spent about, maybe three and a half hours together talking about various aspects of the industry.
Well,
it's a long time.
Now they seem to exclude you from the evildoers, so to speak. I mean, you were pretty much isolated from the guys that are out there doing things that are questionable or causing problems. How did you manage to stay on their good side?
Well, I think that there were two aspects of the conversation that sort of led down that path. One was that he had gotten, independent of any commentary from me, a lot of input about metrics in general. And I take it from his secondhand reporting that a lot of that was extremely favorable. I think one of the quotes that he had in the article was that he had mentioned to me, which actually surprised me, was that he said he had talked to, several prominent people in the industry who had all, sort of commented in the discussion that metrics had had an enormous impact on a lot of people, to the extent that some people actually said the product changed my life. Mm-hmm. I kind of thought that was a little over the top or dramatic, but he said that comment came from quite a few people. So I think that from the standpoint of the historical perspective of metrics and what it did for the industry, that there was a lot of positive stuff that filtered through from third parties, not from me. I really didn't comment much about metrics except to say, you know, why I sold it and, you know, what my actions subsequent to that were. And then I think the second aspect of it was that anticipating that there would be an issue about, you know, coming back with the Progenix brand, I actually showed the author a bunch of confidential, as yet to be published, scientific data from the ongoing long human trial that we're doing with the products, and he was, you know, considerably impressed with the, you know, the sophistication and the extent of the measurements and determinations that were being included. So I think I, you know, convinced him that the products that I was currently marketing were very, very well substantiated in terms of safety and efficacy and stuff like that.
Scott, let me ask you a question about that, because I think that's important to bring up here and not, like, get lost in the shuffle. I mean, you spend an extraordinary amount of money on doing research. I mean, like, probably way more than you really need to, as far as, you know, safety studies go. Why is it that you do these studies, and you know, and why do you incur your own expense on doing this?
Well, you know, my long-term goal, Dave, is to put these bioactive compounds in, you know, a much sort of higher plane of, you know, commercial distribution, and that is, you know, for legitimate medical reasons. And, you know, if your goal is to do that, you know, there are institutionalized, you know, perhaps arbitrary, but nonetheless pretty much set in stone rules about, you know, what you can assert in that channel and how you have to back it up. And, of course, obviously, you know, if you're going to promote a product for the restoration of some defined health or, you know, physical endpoint in a human being, you better make sure that the stuff is safe.
Right.
So, I mean, we had to do animal studies that took, you know, certain key ingredients of the products to the range of, you know, 3,000 milligrams per kilogram in the animal studies to make sure that there was no toxicity whatsoever. And, you know, it's just very laborious, very costly kind of busy work. But you need to do it if your ultimate marketplace is, you know, a medical application. That's where you have to put the initial money.
And where do you see these products being used to help with populations?
Well, we've just recently completed an animal study that we're looking specifically at the application of the ingredients to accelerate wound healing. That study's been accepted for publication and is going to be presented for the first time publicly at the end of the year at an international wound healing medical meeting. And what we were able to demonstrate in the animals was basically two very important things. One is we could close the animal's wound in half the time that, you know, it would take using a comparable sort of control product, which in our case was a whey protein isolate, you know, isonitrogenous, isocaloric, our stuff versus another WPI. And when we made that comparison, we found that the animal's wounds healed in half the time, and more importantly, the tissue architecture of the wound itself was restored almost simultaneous with wound closure, which meant that when we made the objective assessment of what's called burst strength, which is really the most objective measurement you can apply to see if the wound closure is actually, you know, solid and won't reopen.
Right.
And when we did that, the burst strength was like 3.5 times what the control animals was when they eventually closed. So that's a pretty impressive demonstration. You know, that market in the U.S. for chronic wounds is estimated to be $25 billion.
Wow.
And for acute wounds, it's about $10 billion.
I mean, is it? I mean, I know without doing studies, you can't really say for sure. But is it safe to say that? I mean, if you're damaging, you know, if you have a wound in an animal, that it's pretty comparable to what you're doing in the gym to yourself when you're working out?
Well, actually, muscle hypertrophy is nothing but microscopic wound healing in the muscle bed. The fibers that, you know, are damaged with the eccentric phase of the lifting are actually disrupted. They're actually physically almost devitalized. And in essence, what occurs as part of the overall adaptive response to that micro wound is the insinuation of additional cross-sectional area. It's very much like when you break a long bone. If you go back, you know, after the healing process has occurred with a long bone fracture, you look at the area of the break, and you'll see there's a very distinct histological region that they call a callus. And the architecture of that break point is now been remodeled in the, you know, healing process to insinuate a dimensionally stronger bone matrix, so that if a similar stimulus was applied at that given site in the future, say equivalent force that caused the fracture in the first place was reapplied,
right,
after the healing, it probably wouldn't fracture the bone. Mm. And that's kind of like the deal with muscle, that a prominent part of the wound repair mechanism at the individual myofiber level is this increase in cross-sectional area accompanied by some increase in the aspect of the connective tissue enclosing the muscle fibers that would tend to make the muscle more resistant to tearing at, you know, an equivalent level of stress. So these things are very generic, these bioactive components, in that, you know, obviously nature designed them to be that way, because you can see the same thing in fractions of mother's milk, or, you know, mammalian milk that you extract from a mouse, as you can from an elephant. Mm-hmm. And in essence, what that probably means is that these compounds gain access to all tissues, rather nonspecifically, but then once inside the actual interior of the cell, they're probably complexed with an intermediate compound that then carries them into the nucleus of the cell. And then something about the nature of the combined carrier and active, you know, component initiates a gene program that then is very specific for the tissue. So if you have an injury that encompasses, you know, bone cells as opposed to muscle cells, the components of these bioactive fractions would gain equal access to both kinds of tissue, but at the level of the tissue would elaborate a very specific signal to put those cells back together again in the way they were originally. And that's probably because there's an intermediate step where the molecule is compounded to an intracellular component that gains access to the nucleus of that cell and then activates very specific response elements on gene programs in the nuclear DNA to elaborate messages to the cell to say, okay, go make this protein, make that protein, make that protein, and as a result, the cell repairs itself.
So you're saying that you found that the fractions that are incorporated into the cells much more, I guess, optimally?
Well, there's an analogy that exists at the level of the embryologic development of all tissue planes, and that is, there is a series of glycoproteins. All that means is that they're protein molecules that have been essentially attached to carbohydrate moieties that essentially are capable, by virtue of their glycosylation, they can essentially pass membranes with ease because they can basically, you know, attach to very straightforward receptors on cell surfaces that just, you know, bind them on the extracellular side and flip them in a very, you know, simple sort of one-dimensional move into the interior of the cell. Now, those molecules are ostensibly called by the molecular biologists called Wnt molecules, Wnt meaning the abbreviation of their long chemical name, which is, you know, basically abbreviated WNT. Mm-hmm. And there's some 20 to 23 Wnt glycoproteins that have currently been identified, and what these things do in the embryologic development of organisms, they essentially, you know, transgress cell membranes. Inside the cell, they are complexed with an intermediate that is known, and that intermediate is called beta-catenin. And the beta-catenin exists in an inactive form in the interior of the cell, and that inactive form is what complexes with a Wnt glycoprotein. And then the complex gains access to the inside of the cell's nucleus. Once inside, the beta-catenin molecule becomes active. It basically articulates a structural change in conformation that makes it active, and some physical interaction between the activated beta and catenin and the Wnt glycoprotein allows that complex to be very specifically targeted to specific regions of the nuclear DNA that are responsible for coding very specific messages to, you know, synthesize discrete proteins that do X, Y, and Z functions or X, Y, and Z structures inside specific cells. And since that occurs in embryologic development, some people, myself included, think that many of these fractions, if they are not Wnt compounds in actuality, they are very much like them because they are so nonspecific across different species. You know, you can use these things from one animal species to another and see the exact same cellular events. So there has to be some common denominator whereby they are nonspecifically available to tissue, but once, you know, localized in that tissue, there is some, you know, attendant change in their conformation or their activity or their ability to bind DNA or something that allows them to then roll out gene programs which have very specific activity in highly differentiated tissue.
Scott, let me stop you a second because I don't want to lose anyone here. Are you saying that basically what you're doing is you've created a series of these isolates or, you know, that kind of mimic what goes on in the embryo?
Well, I can't say that with certainty, but if I had to bet my bottom dollar right now on the probability that that's the case, I would probably make that bet without too much hesitation.
So these whey isolates actually mimic embryological protein fractions that you get, I guess, when you're developing embryologically. And what you're saying is that there's a kind of a connection here or similarity to the way what goes on in the embryo versus what's going on now in the grown adult, obviously.
Yeah, with respect to, you know, the functional endpoint, they're identical. I mean, essentially, these fractions in whey are very fascinating because, you know, there are lots of different, you know, demonstrations that these things exist. I mean, they produce all kinds of different effects that are very, very specific. And yet, the fraction that contains them is completely, you know, sort of black box-like. Nobody knows what's in there except that there's a lot of stuff in there that isn't accounted for by what we usually typically call growth factors. For example, there are all kinds of standard, usual, and customary growth factors in whey fractions. There's IGFs, there's fibroblast growth factors, there's epidermal growth factors, there's platelet-derived growth factors, the whole slew of, you know, identifiable and, you know, definitely, you know, pretty well understood growth factors exist in whey. However, when you use very sophisticated techniques to remove all of those well-known growth factors and then you study what's left behind, you find that over 90% of the stimulatory activity that you can record in different tissues is still present after removing all of those conventionally, you know, described growth factor proteins. So that means that the majority of what is referred to as this mitogenic, you know, growth factor component is undescribed. Nobody knows what the molecules are, what their individual characteristics are, you know, even they wouldn't even know what their molecular weights are. We just know that the most powerful component of whey that does this kind of thing is 90% composed by these unknown things. And it's known that three-quarters of the proteins in the whey fractions are, in fact, glycosylated. They, you know, they have a carbohydrate coat that essentially would allow them to pass through the epithelial barrier of the intestinal tract and get into the circulation. So the coincidence of 75% of all the proteins being glycosylated and 90% of the fraction being responsible for these tissue growth promotion and differentiation stimuli suggests to me that if they're not Wnt glycoproteins, they're very much, you know, much the same thing from a functional standpoint.
Gotcha.
But, you know, Doc, you know, you have a such a tremendous
scientific basis for just about everything that goes into your products in terms of study and application. And getting back to the Sports Illustrated article as an example, that article indicates that most supplement companies are really nothing more than marketing giants, and it really set the distance between you and them. And a great example was the article stated that MuscleTech, for example, offers spiffs to GNC employees of up to $8 a tub for MuscleTech products, for every tub of MuscleTech product that they sell. Now, how does a marketing strategy like this make you feel, knowing that all it takes is eight measly dollars to undermine all of these years of expensive R&D that you put into your products?
Well, you know, I'm not kind of marketing them on that plane. I mean, one of the things that really clearly is the truth is that, you know, I've released Progenics in much the same way that Metrix originally got into commercial distribution, and that is, you know, before I made a decision that it was even worthwhile contemplating, you know, trying to take a run at the market with Metrix, you know, I engaged, you know, Bill Phillips to do that field study with the product that, you know, encompassed some like 600 people.
Right.
And that was basically for one purpose and one purpose only, and that was to see if, you know, the average consumer who was, you know, interested in the category gave a shit about the stuff. I thought that it had certain positive attributes, but, you know, I've learned my lesson time and time again that I'm not the average person, so basically I had no clue whether the formulation would have any appeal to the general consumer who was paying attention to this category. And, you know, it was a requirement for Bill to do that study before any distribution was contemplated. You know, this is very much what I'm doing with Progenics. Instead of having a third party kind of, you know, do that determination, I'm just doing it myself. And, you know, the marketing of it, you know, will kind of be determined by, you know, I've given this like a year to see what the accumulated, you know, response and the feedback and everything else is, and make a decision about where to go from there. But the fact of the matter is that I knew going into this, before I even decided to do a test, what the products would do. You know, I knew very precisely what they were capable of doing and what they were not capable of doing, and that's really why I wanted to see whether those actual, you know, facts about the product's functionality would have any interest in the consumer market. And I think I can tell, and we're now into what, the ninth or tenth month of this experiment, that, you know, the products in fact do have some, you know, pretty positive consumer takeaway. And we have basically over an 80% reorder rate on these things.
Wow, that's huge.
Right,
they're,
wow,
not the cheapest things, you know, in the marketplace, as you know. So that to me says a very, you know, emphatic yes, there's, you know, perceived value in them. And from the standpoint of, you know, the uniqueness, again, if someone compares, for example, the growth stimulating properties of this with, you know, a steroid or a pseudosteroid or something like that, you know, there's going to be no comparison in terms of magnitude of effect. You know, these things do not work like steroids do, so they are not going to produce steroid-like results. But if a right. person kind of just confines their perception to, you know, a valuable, you know, true competitive product like another whey protein, they are going to see differences, you know. And I knew that going into it because we did a study where we used people who were not, you know, experts at this or that and had very little experience, but, you know, who were evenly matched in terms of every attribute you can really, you know, set aside, and in those two groups, you know, the group that used our proteins gained three times as much muscle mass in a 12-week period as the control group who were taking commodity whey. Now, you know, that's not to say that, you know, the Progenics group gained muscle mass like they would if they were on, you know, a gram of cypionate and, you know, 500 milligrams of DECA and 40 milligrams of Anavar a day. That's right. Not going to happen.
Right.
What do you think is the solution? I mean, do you foresee the government stepping in and really, you know, hurting the supplement industry the way it is now and changing it, or do you foresee it going on the way it is?
Well, I personally think that this Dechea thing is down the toilet. I think that thing is going to be scrapped, you know, in no time flat, especially with, you know, the makeup of the Congress currently. I think that, you know, that whole Dechea thing is basically going to be history in short order. What comes from that next, I don't know. I mean, the fact of the matter is that I'm pretty angry about a lot of these things. You know, for example, the whole ephedrine issue to me is a complete travesty, because I think that that issue is really about, you know, people making methamphetamine in their bathtub with it, as opposed to, you know, being a safe compound. It's a very safe compound. When used properly, it's a very safe compound. And if anybody was sitting around waiting for the world to come up with a fat loss pill, I got news for you. That's it. It's already here.
Right. That was the most effective. Ephedrine was the most effective fat loss pill substance on Earth, wasn't it?
Yes, and it still is. I don't know of anything that comes close to what ephedrine can do for fat loss. I mean, it has the perfect pharmacodynamic and pharmacologic properties of what you would expect a fat loss agent to be. And that is, from a molecular point of view, from an energetic point of view, it basically, you know, causes fat loss without compromising the lean body mass.
Mm.
I mean, it's a perfect fat loss pill.
Doesn't the FDA always pull stuff off the market that works? I mean, we talked about this before. Remember the product Triacana from France?
Yeah.
France.
Yeah, Triacana.
I know you like that.
It's a great product. I mean, there are a lot of people, I mean, a lot, perhaps, you know, hundreds of thousands, that are walking around with suboptimal thyroid control over metabolism. The focus heretofore has always been on the T3 and T4 compounds, and, you know, what do they do? Well, I got news for you. The T3 and T4 compounds are not the ones that interact significantly with metabolism of cells. The products that basically control fat oxidation are, you know, T2 and the associated derivatives, of which Triacana is one of them.
So Triacana contains T2 in it? Is that the idea?
Well,
it's a derivative.
It's a derivative.
Mm-hmm.
Can this be looked as some sort of, you know, conspiracy that, you know, the medical community at large doesn't want, you know, the obesity epidemic to go away because of the amazing amount of revenue it would lose from treatment?
You know, I don't know about that. I know that, you know, the people with a financial animus not to have chronic disease, you know, end abruptly is, you know, the insurance companies. I mean, the insurance company's economic model is one that encourages, to use their own industry term, vertical disenrollment at the earliest possible time. And that basically means that the ideal, you know, subject or, you know, insured person would live to like age 50 and then drop dead immediately without any chance of rescue. You know, the last thing that anybody in an insurance company wants is to hear about a program that would make people, you know, live way into their 90s and beyond.
Right.
Because that would, you know, bankrupt them in a hurry.
So, I mean, ephedra used as, you know, an anti-obesity drug would be highly efficacious.
Absolutely. And in fact, I'll make the statement on your public radio, there are currently obese people in this country who, through either no fault of their own because they're, you know, grossly insulin sensitive by genetic, you know, background, or they have subjected themselves to the ludicrous, you know, protocol of low-calorie dieting so many times that their metabolism is so hopelessly skewed to the increased efficiency of, you know, fat deposition, that basically nothing they're going to do short of taking a pharmacologic agent is likely to have any permanent effect with them.
Wow.
I mean,
and ephedra would be that.
Are pretty shocking. I mean, any maintenance program that follows a, quote, low-calorie diet that has any element of calorie surveillance as part of the maintenance plan has less than a 6% chance of keeping the weight off a person.
Wow.
Well, given that fact, Scott, I mean, we were talking a little off the topic before when we started recording. Let's talk about these herbals. I mean, you say that ephedra is safe. We say that triacanthin is safe. Let's talk about what happened to MuscleTech. You know, they had all their products recalled. I'm hearing, at least through the grapevine, that it could have been the tainted, or maybe it could be the ECGC, which is the green tea extract that they're saying could be causing this liver failure. Is there any merit to what's going on, or is this a witch hunt against them?
Well, you know, my personal perspective on this is that, you know, why use herbal sources of ephedra when the chemical ephedrine hydrochloride is a known entity, can be manufactured very cheaply with the highest quality assurance standards known to man and put into the marketplace? Why resort to Chinese herbs as sources of herbal ephedra when you can get the chemical compounds synthesized and, you know what you're dealing with? You have, you know, consistency of doses, consistency of quality and purity, and you have no ambiguity about how much you're putting in your body.
Right.
And you're not playing Russian roulette with, you know, a compound that may come from an overseas manufacturer who doesn't give a shit about the quality assurance. And in essence, the same with all the green tea ECGC things. It's possible to synthesize ECGC. It's on the market right now. It's called Tvigo. It's pure ECGC, and, you know, it's not contaminated, and it's dosed, you know, for what the label says it is. And you know the human dose is 300 milligrams a day of that stuff, so you take 250 milligram pops, one in the morning, one in the afternoon, and you get, you know, the desired effect without the toxicity.
Is that the problem? With these things, do you think it's a contamination issue?
Well, I mean, it would have to be, because when, you know, reputable sources of these things are used, they don't produce problems. I mean, there have been many studies where, you know, ephedrine has been used in a variety of different, you know, subject populations, old, young, you know, with illness, without illness, obese, not obese. I mean, the track record safety-wise of ephedrine is unimpeachable. And anybody who says anything to the contrary does not know the literature. They have not studied the literature. And that means, by the way, that they don't consider that anything that's not published in the United States is valid, which, of course, is bullshit.
Then how does it go full circle? How do you get, you know, Congress to go along with less than accurate information and actually destroy the marketability of the most efficacious anti-obesity drug known to man and pull it from the shelves based on a tiny handful of adverse events?
Well, we could talk for weeks on end about the intellectual shortcomings of the average person in Congress. But, you know, I mean, ephedrine, as I said, my suspicion is that ephedrine has been treated the way it has, not because there's a lot of people really concerned that it's not safe, because it is safe. There's no question about that. When used properly, it is safe. It has a great track record as a pharmaceutical. So my suspicion is that because it is easily converted in, you know, to a bathtub-type synthesis of meth, that's the reason the government has made it so impossible to get a hold of it and takes your driver's license when you buy cold medicine and stuff. This is bullshit. With respect to the Congress, I mean, look at the issues over anabolic steroids. And, you know, John, I want to commend you for your commentary on that 2020 thing that was aired. And your point is exactly right. I mean, you have guys like Dr. Gary Wadler who are chosen to testify before Congress. You know, I have no personal knowledge of his level of understanding of, you know, the actual pharmacology of anabolic steroids, but I do know from what he has said, you know, publicly about, you know, steroids cause heart disease in our young kids. Well, you know, first of all, no one knows what causes heart disease. And
right.
If he thinks he does, he should step forward to get in line for the Nobel Prize, because I've got news for you. That would be an extraordinarily important revelation to share with the rest of the world. My response is, if I was sitting next to him in Congress and given my turn to speak, I would follow that by saying, well, you know, the Western diet is associated with heart disease. So are we going to outlaw the sale of Wonder Bread because high carbohydrate diets are associated with heart disease? I mean, they are probably more causal for heart disease than, you know, anabolic steroids or any other drug.
And he's probably drinking his alcohol and eating his Wonder Bread every single day of his life, I'm sure this guy.
Well, that's kind of my point, is that, you know, pharmaceuticals are pharmaceuticals. So why should one class be treated any differently than any other class? Like I said, I mean, if you decide to kill yourself with Tylenol, there's nothing stopping you.
Right.
I mean, all you have to have is access to a store that has it. You can, you know, do yourself in no short order with, you know, that stuff. You know,
and you don't even have to be 18.
Tylenol has a label that says, you know, don't take more than this.
Right.
And it's not even age-restricted.
No.
Given everything we just said, Scott, what's next for Progenics? Where are you planning a second-tier move, so to speak, now that the year is coming to an end almost?
Well, we've got one study that is finishing up, I think, in the latter part of June or early July, where we've taken the recovery product and we've put it in an endurance protocol testing scenario. Basically, what we're doing is a very straightforward demonstration for the aerobic athletes that we did with the weightlifters to show the restoration of force loss. That's relevant for people, obviously, who use eccentric exercise as a form of training. For the aerobic athletes, we're basically using elite cyclists in a time trial scenario where they conduct a time trial in the morning. They have a lunchtime break, at which time they take one serving of recovery, and then they're given a time trial in the afternoon. Now, that's just as typical as the force loss experiments. Obviously, you take somebody and time trial them in the a.m., the time trial in the afternoon, their performance is significantly degraded in the afternoon trial. And what we're hoping to show is that their performance is either much less degraded or not degraded at all with one serving of this recovery stuff.
It'll be amazing.
Wow.
Well, I mean, the way that stuff works, we believe, is by virtue of the fact that the most likely explanation, you know, today for the reason force loss occurs is a failure of what's called the electromechanical coupling. In this case, there's an electromechanical uncoupling, and it looks like it's due to an accumulation of calcium at a critical actual anatomical space in the muscle where the nerve impulse is carried to the muscle by a series of ion channels that are called T-tubules. And the T-tubules butt up against an intracellular sort of canal system called sarcoplasmic reticulum. And the juncture between those two structures is called a triad. And there is a voltage sensor on one side and a corresponding ion sensor on the other that work in conjunction to regulate how much calcium is liberated to Sure. propagate contraction. And it appears that that area of the communication pathway in the EC axis of control of contractile strength or force is dislocated with low-frequency fatiguing exercise of the eccentric variety. But that would also apply to, you know, a low-frequency fatigue that would be apparent in, like, a cyclist or a runner, for example.
So you're breaking down the system that transports calcium inside the cell, basically.
Right. And something about the peptides that are liberated in the hydrolysis that produces recovery normalizes that, you know, particular part of the transmission pathway.
Interesting.
And we can't really study that elegantly in an intact human, but, you know, you can do it in isolated what's called skin muscle fiber preps. And if this works in the endurance athletes, the next step would be to go to one of those very sophisticated, you know, fiber models and actually look at the electrochemical, you know, phenomenon to see if, you know, we're correct in our presumption about what's going on.
As a last word before we let you go, this is, if this is correct, what you're saying, I mean, especially for these guys like Lance Armstrong, these guys to do the Tour de France where they're cycling every day 100 something miles. I mean, this product would almost be like required, you know, nutrition almost.
Yeah, I mean, one of the interesting things, Dave, about recovery is that everybody who's taken recovery since we put it on the market last August has raved about it. And that includes a lot of people who are not, you know, in the gym lifting weights. It's occurring with people who are just kind of like weekend warriors who, you know, play tennis all day Saturday and Sunday. And, you know, although they don't experience the kind of fatigue that, you know, a gym guy would experience after a heavy leg workout, they still do sense fatigue.
Right.
And even in those individuals, the use of the recovery, you know, bounces them right back. So it's kind of, you know, a multi-sport type product, really. And if we can demonstrate the benefit to an aerobic endurance athlete, I think the case will be made, at least from a, quote, you know, empirical scientific basis, that it is a multi-sport product.
Yeah, well, especially these guys, like runners. I mean, when I was a runner, and you were a runner, Scott, at 1.2, I mean, you don't miss days. You train every single day. I mean,
right.
This would be a perfect product for a runner. You come back from your run, you take your 25-gram dose, and you know you're going to be good to go maybe later that day because some runners do two workouts and then or definitely the next day.
Yeah, and, you know, that's been the feedback from all the MMA guys, and there's several of them that are using it, is that, you know, they face multiple workouts per day, mm-hmm. especially in close to their competitions. And so that's the feedback from them, is that they can actually, you know, do a morning session, you know, take a break, have lunch, have a serving of recovery, come back and do two or three other workouts in the afternoon, you know, and be good to go.
Right. Well, we're going to have to ask, we have the New York Badass Phil Baroni on a little later. He's got a fight coming up this coming weekend. I got to see if he's tried your product. Maybe we can get him to experiment for his next fight.
Yeah, it'd be great.
All right, Scott, thanks for taking some time out of your schedule, and I'm sure we'll come up with some new questions for you in about a week or two, and we'll have you back.
Okay.
This is Heavy Muscle Radio, only on RxMuscle.com. ALR Industries. ALR Industries products are backed by three decades of experience in the science and lifelong dedication to bodybuilding from its founder, author L. Ray. In 2001, ALR Industries was created to give the hardcore bodybuilder the edge you need to build the perfect beast. Hyperdrive 3.0 is a synergistic blend of fat-burning herbs which yields the most potent legally available formula on the market today. Hyperdrive 3.0 will burn fat, control your appetite, improve your mood and focus, and give you an energy boost you've never experienced. Restore blocks estrogen, enhances libido, and optimizes free testosterone. You'll be stronger, recover faster, and build muscle like never before. Then, fuel your workouts with the great-tasting and energy-enhancing Hyper Shot. Hyper Shot will boost your athletic performance to new levels, allowing you to train harder, improve your endurance, and get the most out of your time in the gym. Whining is not an option for those who refuse to accept mediocrity. Visit ALRIndustries.com today. When you hit the gym, you set in motion a fundamental set of molecular activation signals and cellular growth mechanisms that deliver your desired gains in mass and strength. The magnitude of those processes, as well as how efficiently your muscles recover force production, can dramatically affect your net progress in a training cycle. Progenics protein supplements interact precisely and powerfully to amplify these pathways to produce enhanced growth responses of 100% or more compared to conventional whey protein sources. And they facilitate full recovery of force production in just 6 hours following the most grueling workout, allowing you to train harder, more frequently, for more dramatic gains. Experience the exclusive metabolic advantage available from Nature's Toolbox and Dr. Scott Connolly, renowned pioneer in applied dairy science and inventor of the original Metrex product. Go to ProgenicsSRG.com and use the code NBR801 to get 10% off the purchase of any single Progenics product. RxMuscle.com. Now you have a place to turn when you want the truth on bodybuilding, diet, and exercise, up-to-the-minute news, and more. Visit the RxMuscle.com forums featuring celebrity Q&As with IFBB professional athletes, top amateurs, and the brightest minds in the industry. Listen to our weekly radio shows, including Heavy Muscle Radio, Muscle Girls Inc., After Hours, and more. Contest coverage, videos, even our own social networking site, RX Muscle Place. Visit RxMuscle.com. Heavy Muscle Radio.
Hey, this is Chuck Zito, and you're listening to Heavy Muscle Radio with Dave Palumbo and John Romano.
This hour of Heavy Muscle Radio is brought to you by Progenics. Visit ProgenicsSRG.com.
All right, our next guest is none other than the king himself, eight-time Mr. Olympia Ronnie Coleman. Ronnie, welcome back to the show.
Oh, good to be back.
Good to be back. Good to have you.
Now, Ronnie, this little visit to the show is not on the best of notes. There was an incident that occurred over the weekend. I got my little sources called me up, and I almost didn't believe it because, you know, there's always so many rumors out there about you because you're so well known. What happened on Friday night? Tell us the Ronnie Coleman version.
Oh, all that happened was I was pulled over by police officer on called Dow Worthington Gardens Police Department. It's right inside Arlington, which is where I live. It's real small, about 2,000 people they got in the whole town or whatever. And what happened, he pulled me over. He said he pulled me over for speeding. And
were you speeding?
Probably. I mean, I speed just by anywhere I go. And by the time that I don't, I'm not speeding when I'm driving. So I didn't argue with him. I just said, okay.
Hey, you get pulled over a lot, right?
Oh, yeah. I get pulled over.
And you know all the cops in the area pretty much, right?
Yeah, yeah. Most of them know me, too, man. And most of them know me also. You know. I don't know. This guy, I guess he had something against me. I told him I was a police officer because I worked for police department in a city called the Dallas Methodist Hospital. And they said, yeah. And I said, do you know me? He said, yeah. He said, you worked in Arlington and you used to be full-time, now you're reserve. I said, yeah. They said, okay, hold on, I'll be right back. So he goes back to his car and called Arlington. And asked him if I still worked there. And I, of course, I told him no, because you know, I hadn't worked there for a little while now. Once I left there, I went over to the Dallas Methodist Hospital. The police department was over there. So he came back into the car and said he was going to arrest me for impersonation police officer.
But he knew you were an officer before.
Yeah, he knew I was an officer before. I mean, this is the craziest thing I've ever heard in my whole entire life. So, I just cooperated with him. I don't get no police officers no problem because, you know, I'm one, and I respect them. Respect all guys, you know, like brothers of mine.
Sure.
I got 15 years in here in Arlington, and then the other one up at the Dallas Methodist Hospital. So I just went on down there with the guy, and he booked me in. They set a bond at $1,000, and I got out like an hour and a half or so, and went on back my business.
So now, did he like handcuff you and or the whole thing?
Well, yeah. Like I had murdered somebody.
Jeez, and he knew you.
Huh?
And he knew you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He knew who I was, and he knew I was a police officer. I'm like, how can you impersonate one when you are one? So that's his way of doing stuff. I mean, you know, I consider all police officers brothers and stuff. I mean, the last thing in my mind would ever be facing one under arrest or writing one a ticket or something like that, but...
It's bad enough to write you a ticket.
Yeah, he was different. Yeah.
It would be bad enough writing you a ticket. You know, this guy actually arrested you.
Yep.
Now, I remember one time you told me something about having a brass pass, and that's like the gold version of the badge, right?
Yeah.
Now, is that what you get when you retire or after you have a certain number of years in? I mean, do you still have a badge?
Oh, yeah. I still have a badge. I have worked for Arlington. And,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I said, yeah, I still had the badge I worked when I had worked at Arlington. So,
but I mean, I know how it works in New York. I mean, if you know, if, even if you're not a cop, I mean, if you have a you know, a badge or a sergeant's card and another officer sees it, I mean, you get a pass. I mean, exactly. This guy knows you're an officer.
I thought it kind of worked that way down here too, until I came across this guy. I don't know what planet he's from, but apparently it's another one where they take police officers to jail. For what reason? I don't know. I don't know what purpose they're supposed to serve.
Did this?
I'm supposed to be some bad citizen or something. I'm breaking the law all the time. They just need to put me in jail. For what reason? I don't know.
Did you think this guy had it in for you? Yeah. Was it?
Guess he had some personal against me because, you know, I'm so successful and I work so hard to get where I am. And, you know, I guess he didn't feel that he got the better end of his life or whatever. So he's going to try to destroy mine and by arresting me or whatever, or destroy my spirits or whatever. But, you know, I don't think so.
Did you get the impression, did he say anything to you that would lead you to believe that, hey, maybe this guy didn't like you or that he was like punishing you for something?
Yes, a little bit, you know. It's kind of hard to read a lot into what people say and stuff, but, you know, after I thought about it, you know, I kind of did feel that way. Like he had something against me, and he was going to arrest me and prove that, you know, he's I don't know. I don't know what he's trying to prove.
Maybe make a name for himself.
Yeah, I'm still trying to make sense of everything that happened because, you know, it's so unbelievable to me.
To us too, Ronnie. And, you know, even the paper. I mean, I read in the Dallas Morning News, it said that during the stop, you pulled out a badge and told the arresting officer that you were a reserve police officer with Arlington. Then the article goes on to state that he called that in, and that turned out to be false. So would Arlington have given him bad information, or did the cop just lie?
I really don't understand it. The guy asked me if I had a badge, and of course I didn't have my hospital police officer's badge, so I just showed him my old one where I worked at Arlington. You know, so I don't know if he just decided that, you know, he make it seem like, you know, he pulled me over and I say I'm a police officer in Arlington and here's my badge, but I never said nothing like that.
Right.
But, you know, things are what they are, and apparently ain't nothing you can do to change it when being placed under arrest. So.
Now, I think there's a law in Texas about, I guess there was some kind of crime wave where people were impersonating officers and pulling over women and raping them.
Oh, yeah, one time they had some guys going around. You know, and police, fake police cars and stuff, and they were pulling people over and, you know, trying to, well, mostly women, trying to rape women or whatever.
Right.
You had some guys that out there, you know, just faking like they police officers and harassing people and stuff. But, you know, that's when you impersonate one, not when you been to the academy for a year and worked on the streets for another 15 years. It ain't impersonating no police officer, and you currently one too. I just wasn't working full time where I was at the hospital. I just worked, you know, whenever they call me to do something.
This is like, here's a good analogy, John. You and I get fired from MD. We go to a bodybuilding show to cover the show for ourselves, and when we're going to go in the front door, the people say, you know, where's your pass? And I'm like, well, we're working for RX Muscle. And they call the cops and have us arrested because, you know, because we're not who we say we are anymore, you know.
Yeah.
You basically have, a reserve job with the Baylor Health Care System, which obviously has a separate kind of badge. Is that right, Ronnie?
Dallas Method. It's just regular police department. It's not Baylor. It's Dallas Method.
Oh. Okay.
Oh, they said Baylor Healthcare.
It's a regular police department. They just said at the hospital.
Okay. So now, when you told him this, obviously this should have been able to be checked. Why didn't he check on this job?
Well, he had already got all his information from Arlington, and so he was basing everything on that.
Oh. So now, did he, when you got arrested, did he call other officers like backup or anything like that?
Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
Like you were going to fight him or something like that, right?
Yeah.
So how many officers eventually showed up?
There's two other.
And did they know you?
I didn't ask. Yeah, one of them did, but I didn't ask the other one.
This is nuts. Well, these guys know you. They know you're a police officer, and they arrest you anyway.
They work here and know me. So,
this is insane.
That ain't nothing big.
Did no one pulled any guns on you, did they?
Oh, no, nothing like that.
All right, so you get to the station in handcuffs, is that right?
Mm-hmm, yep.
What goes on when you get there?
Not much. You know, I'm trying to ask this guy what's going on and what's this all about, and, of course, he ain't saying too much of nothing, so you know, I just did what he told me to do, and like I said, I was out of there in about an hour and a half, 2 hours, somewhere in there.
Now, was this a young cop, like fresh out of the academy, or was this a seasoned guy on the street?
Old guy. He said he was retired from police, some force. He said he was retired, and he decided to work there. You know.
Maybe he was impersonating an officer.
Yeah, maybe he. It was him.
In more than one way.
Now, where does this go now? Do you have to go to court for this?
Yeah, I think they might have a court date if it goes through, but, you know, I was going to check on some things and talk to some attorneys about it and see what actually happens from here. So, yeah.
Right.
This is something that, like I said, I am a police officer, and I really don't understand what's going on.
Now, if you call the place where you work, can't they just make like a phone call for you and say, "Hey, you guys are morons. You know, this guy works for us. What are you doing?" You know.
Yeah. That's one of the places people I got to talk to right there. And I already talked to them. They said they're going to talk to the Dallas police attorney, Dallas police officer's attorney. See if he can straighten everything out.
How'd this thing make it into the paper?
Well, I think, you know, because the police, the newspaper. See, I work for the police department, you know.
Sure.
And every time something goes out on the radio, they have a radio. They have a scanner or whatever. And they listen to all our calls and what everybody's talking about. So I'm quite sure they heard it, and they, you know, they just called and asked about it.
Gotcha.
And, you know, the story they got is not the story that happened, but it's close to what happened.
Right. Now, you had to be really embarrassed by this. I mean, here you are, you're an officer for many years now. You're very respected in the community. You know, everyone knows that you're a good guy. You're a world-class athlete. And, I mean, to get picked up by this guy, I mean, you had to be kind of pissed off, right?
Yeah, pissed off and in shock.
Do you think there was a racist element to it, Ronnie?
Huh?
Do you think there was a racist element to it? Was the cop white?
I don't know, you know. Like I said, I was in such shock and awe about the situation. I couldn't believe it was happening. I didn't know. I still don't know what to think about the situation.
Do you think this is something that you know? You're obviously going to get clear to this. Is this something that you would take up legally? Would you sue them?
I don't know. I was just going to wait and see what the attorneys and stuff had to say about it. You know,
and sounds like false arrest to me.
I'm still in shock and stuff. I find it hard to believe.
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be. I mean, here you are, you know, a dedicated police officer, 15-year veteran on the force. You put your life on the line for the citizens of your community, and then you're arrested for impersonating an officer. That's got to be like.
Yeah, I mean, it's the craziest thing I've ever heard in my whole entire life.
Well, clearly you're going to beat this thing. So we just wanted you to be able to give you a chance to, you know, say the story from your perspective, and you know, just so all of our, so that our people in our community know that this is not the thing that's That's really happening.
I'm no guy that never worked for a police department without harassing citizens and stuff, you know, like I'm some crazy lunatic. I've never been nothing like that before. I mean, I worked for 15 years and I had fun and I enjoyed the job and I still love it. I still love all the guys I work with, you know, and they still like brothers to me. Always will be, because once you get in your blood, you know, it's there for life, pretty much.
What are the other officers saying? I mean, I'm sure you've talked to some of your friends in the force. They got to be kind of pissed off about this, too.
Oh, they were highly upset. Highly, highly upset.
I mean, because I know there's like a, I mean, even if I get pulled over in New York and I have a friend who I train with who's an officer, and he gave me a little PBA card, and I show that, almost every single person I've ever been pulled over by respects that. So here you are as an actual police officer. These guys, you know that, you know, they can get pulled over just as easily as anyone else, and I would think there's a brotherhood there or something.
Yeah, yep. That's what it normally is. You know, but I don't know about this guy. I don't know what his motivation is. I have no idea. Just so unbelievable.
I think his wife probably was bitching him out earlier in the day, and he was looking to take out his frustration on someone. And unfortunately, you happen to be the guy.
I don't know. I like to know. I really want to know.
I think you'll know soon enough.
We got to put John Romano on the job. Send him down there. He'll find out.
I'll fix it.
John, you got to do an investigative reporting piece on this guy and find out what the deal is.
Yeah, exactly. I'd love to know.
Yeah, man, just email me his name. I'll do it.
Romano on the job.
I'll take care of it. I'll do it for Ronnie.
Oh, okay.
All right, Ronnie, aside from that, where are we seeing you next? What's your next appearance?
I'll be in New York at Steve Weinberger's show.
Oh, that's right. The Atlantic States. We'll see you in 2 weeks.
Yeah, me, Dexter, and Jay.
That should be a good guest posing. How are you looking? Posing.
I'm looking okay. You know,
put that size back on.
Not all of it yet. I'm still working on it. I have it all back in about 4 or 5 weeks though.
4 or 5 weeks.
I'm still at like 295 right now.
Oh wow!
I ain't got back up to my normal 315, but I'll have it back pretty soon.
How's your strength doing now? I mean, is it pretty much returned?
My strength?
Yeah.
It's pretty much retiring. I'm doing pretty good as far as my strength goes.
Are you back to lifting heavy, or are you still revised the way you're training?
I'm still revised right now. I'm trying to get in about 4 days a week right now. So I hadn't got to my serious training yet, but I'm working toward that. Doing it slowly.
Are you going to go back to Metroflex and train?
I might go there for a little bit. I'll go there for a little bit, train some days.
Like the eye of the tiger, you got to train in like that sewer, you know, to get the motivation back there.
Exactly. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, that's my home now.
Your home gym is too civilized for training in.
Yeah. That's why Metroflex is my real home gym. Right. Home gym.
Yeah.
All right, Ronnie, you got to keep us updated and let us know what's going on with this fiasco, because I
surely will.
We hate injustice on this show. We it drives us crazy.
Well, I know y'all know what that's all about.
Oh, yeah.
I ain't got to say too much to y'all about it.
No, you don't.
Nope.
All right, Ronnie. Thanks for calling.
Y'all have a good one.
All right, you too.
We'll see you in New York, Ronnie.
This is Heavy Muscle Radio, only on RxMuscle.com. ALR Industries. ALR Industries products are backed by 3 decades of experience in the science and lifelong dedication to bodybuilding from its founder, Arthur L. Ray. In 2001, ALR Industries was created to give the hardcore bodybuilder the edge you need to build the perfect beast. Hyperdrive 3.0 is a synergistic blend of fat-burning herbs which yields the most potent legally available formula on the market today. Hyperdrive 3.0 will burn fat, control your appetite,
improve your mood and focus, and give you an energy boost you've never experienced. Restore. Restore blocks estrogen, enhances libido, and optimizes free testosterone. You'll be stronger, recover faster, and build muscle like never before. Then, fuel your workouts with the great-tasting and energy-enhancing Hyper Shot. Hyper Shot will boost your athletic performance to new levels, allowing you to train harder, improve your endurance, and get the most out of your time in the gym. Whining is not an option for those who refuse to accept mediocrity. Visit ALRIndustries.com today. When you hit the gym, you set in motion a fundamental set of molecular activation signals and cellular growth mechanisms that deliver your desired gains in mass and strength. The magnitude of those processes, as well as how efficiently your muscles recover force production, can dramatically affect your net progress in a training cycle. Progenics protein supplements interact precisely and powerfully to amplify these pathways to produce enhanced growth responses of 100% or more compared to conventional whey protein sources. And they facilitate full recovery of force production in just 6 hours following the most grueling workout, allowing you to train harder, more frequently, for more dramatic gains. Experience the exclusive metabolic advantage available from Nature's Toolbox and Dr. Scott Connolly, renowned pioneer in applied dairy science and inventor of the original Metrex product. Go to ProgenicsSRG.com and use the code NBR801 to get 10% off the purchase of any single Progenics product.
RxMuscle.com. Now you have a place to turn when you want the truth on bodybuilding, diet, and exercise, up-to-the-minute news, and more. Visit the RxMuscle.com forums featuring celebrity Q&As with IFBB professional athletes, top amateurs, and the brightest minds in the industry. Listen to our weekly radio shows, including Heavy Muscle Radio, Muscle Girls Inc., After Hours, and more. Contest coverage, videos, even our own social networking site, RX Muscle Place. Visit RxMuscle.com.
Heavy Muscle Radio.
Hey, this is the game, Triple H from the WWE. You're listening to Heavy Muscle Radio with John Romano and Dave Palumbo.
This hour of Heavy Muscle Radio is brought to you by Progenics. Visit ProgenicsSRG.com.
All right, our next guest is both an exciting and dangerous MMA fighter who's fought in UFC, Pride, and now Strikeforce. The man I'm talking about is former teen bodybuilder and the man they call the New York Badass. Welcome, Phil Baroni.
What's up, man? How you doing?
Phil, back on top again, huh?
Fighting my way back on top.
Well, now, you're a fighter. That's what you're supposed to
right.
do.
Phil, you got a fight coming up with Joe Diesel Riggs June 6th in St. Louis. And the winner is, from what I hear, at least from Justin Miller, who hooked us up, is the winner is likely to get a title shot at 170 pounds. Is that correct?
Yeah, most likely against Nick Diaz. So, you know, it'll be a big fight either way because Joe Diesel Riggs beat Nick Diaz before. And if not, it'll be a big me fight him, you know, East Coast, West Coast thing. So either way, it'll be a big fight. So it's going to be me. And,
Is Nick Diaz the current champion in 170?
No, the organization, you know, Elite XC folded, and you know, Strikeforce never had a 170-pound champion crown, so you know, we're the first champion at 170.
Now, isn't it true that Diaz knocked out Frank Shamrock just recently?
Yeah, beat him up good, beat his ass, and really? stopped him, I think, in the third round.
Now you had some trouble with Shamrock. So how do you feel if you get past Riggs, getting on you know, to fight this guy Diaz?
When I beat Riggs, you know, I think I'll definitely beat Shamrock. You know, I'm not gonna call excuses, you know, reasons that I lost the fight against Shamrock, and you know, I'm sure, you know, I could beat Shamrock in a rematch, and you know, it just wasn't my night that night. It was his night. And, you know, he's 3 years older than when I fought him, and he had a broken arm and some inactivity since he fought me. So I don't think it was actually the same guy I fought. But gotcha. Regardless, I think I beat him anyway.
Before we get started on this interview, I heard you got married now. Is that true?
Yeah, I got married.
Congratulations. How did you decide to finally tie the knot?
I don't know. That's a loaded question. Who knows?
Well, no, Dave needs to know because he's been engaged for like 45 years.
That's right.
Don't do it, girl. Maybe.
Don't do it.
Just keep the noose tied. You know, don't hang yourself with it.
Gotcha. All right.
So, So I see that you're fighting at 170 pounds now, and knowing how muscular you know you are, I find that hard to believe that you've been very big for that weight. Considering I've seen
I was big at 85. You know, I never imagined I could make 70. You know, I definitely lost some muscle, and you know I'm a lot leaner. I came into fights really lean in the past, but I mean as far as bodybuilding goes, I'd be. You know, real couple weeks out of contest shape, you know, I'm right there. I mean, you know, as far as body fat, I'm crushed right. Yeah, I lost some muscle. I'm definitely small, but I feel, you know, I feel I'm stronger and faster. Yeah, better athlete, more athletic. I mean, I think the big muscles look better as far as, you know, bodybuilding goes, but I think when you get the muscles big past a certain point, I think maybe they're more cosmetic than they are functioning. You know, I think if your biceps are, you know, 19 or 17, you know, they might be the same strength at 17 as they are at 19. They're just bigger, you know, so that's extra weight right there.
So you think maybe you're faster now because of the fact that you lost some of that muscle? I mean, Lance Armstrong, when he lost muscle, wound up winning the Tour de France.
Yeah, exactly. You know, he went through, he had cancer, he lost all that weight, lost all that muscle, and, you know, he also learned how to deal with pain through the chemotherapy.
True.
But, you know, that's what he did, and that led to his, you know, success. He was a decent guy, and when he lost all that weight, he's the best in the world. So, you know, I'm planning on the same thing, Lance Armstrong type results. You know, I'm doing Lance Armstrong type training for sure. You know, with intervals and whatnot that I learned from starting from that guy. So I think it's definitely going to be a huge factor and big improvement in my performance.
I mean, I'm looking at your pictures that Justin sent me. I mean, and you look like you're crushed triated everywhere. You look like you can get on a bodybuilding stage.
Yeah, I mean, it should be pictures come up like Tuesday or whatever on the big underground forum, MMA.TV. I mean, I just did a workout outside. They saw me doing an outside workout. I mean, from the pictures, it looks like I have like shredded glutes. You know, I just did a little thing like kiss my ass rigs and my ass is fucking shredded. I mean, I'm really lean. I've been on a diet for, I've been on, you know, a bodybuilding diet, 6 meals a day, you know, high protein, you know, all good carbs, you know, and then none at night for 12 weeks at least.
So what would your fighting weight be, given the fact that you weigh in 24 hours?
I'm 182, 183 right now, and that's what I plan on fighting in the ring. I'll dehydrate myself to 170, and I'll get in the ring at, you know, 182, 183. Try not to blow up too much. In the past, I've had problems where I rebound, you know, which was good for, like, a, you know, bodybuilding, you know, mindset where you're big and you're full, but, you know, it gets you out. You can't punch when you're loaded up like that. You know, I've cut down to 185, was training at, like, you know, 198, 200, and got in the ring like 208, you know, thinking I look freaking huge, but, you know, it worked against me in the past, so I learned the hard way not to do that. I'm going to try and keep the scale with me and only fill up to the weight I've been training at, 182, 103 pounds.
Yeah, because you know what'll happen? You're carrying around all that extra weight, and all that extra water makes it hard to actually inhale all that air.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. And the worst thing you can have in a fight is a bump. Yeah. You know, it's the worst thing you can have.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. Now, you know, it's funny, but we were talking a little bit about Britt Miller, who's a female bodybuilder, and she decided on one day's notice to do a tough man in Myrtle Beach, and she knocked the four girls out and won $2,500. You had kind of a similar thing happen to you. You were at the, I believe, the teen nationals or collegiate nationals, and something happened. You weren't registered or something like that, right? And didn't you go next door?
I went over there. I wasn't registered. I don't know what happened. I took second the year before. I really think I got robbed, but let's not go there. Bad memories, but I took second, you know, and how can I not have been eligible the next year to be in it, you know, and I took second, but I got a 1 year overall, and somehow I wasn't eligible, you know, I wasn't registered or whatever it was, and it happened to be a tough man contest that night in there, and I did it, you know, I had a heavyweight, of course, four fights, and I knocked three guys out, and I got kind of disqualified in the last one.
You made a name for yourself, and that's how you got into fighting. So it was pretty crazy the way that happened, huh?
Yeah, I guess it worked out.
So what's your nutrition like in terms of, you know, protein, fats, carbs? You pay attention to all of that, or you just kind
of... Yeah, of course. I learned a lot from bodybuilding. I mean, you know, I used to when I was fighting the five, have like 50 grams of protein, you know, every meal. And then I'd have, you know, I always on, you know, good carbohydrates, you know, whether it's brown rice, oatmeal, soba noodles. I mean, you know, just real complex carbohydrates. Those are basically the only carbohydrates I eat. The protein I'd eat would be the, you know, fish, you know, raw grilled, you know, chicken grilled, you know, just like a bodybuilder, you know, and then protein shakes, of course. And, you know, cutting the weight down, you know, I have six meals like that. And one thing I used to do always is have a, you know, 50-gram protein shake, you know, like longer digestive protein, like, you know, calcium caseinate for, like, before bed. You know, now I go to bed on an empty stomach without eating for 2 or 3 hours before. All my meals are, you know, 30 grams of protein the most. Sometimes 25, wow. You know. So I cut my protein in half. My carbohydrates stayed the same, about 30 grams. I mean, I just really cut the protein. I started taking more... essential fats. I mean, you know, fish oils. Eating more salmon. You know, wild salmon.
Right.
And you know, I'm really meticulous on my diet. I mean, more than any other fighter. I think I learned a lot about it from bodybuilding. And you know, I still use it and apply that.
It sounds a lot like my diet. What? Who's actually training you? Do you have someone who's doing your nutrition?
I mean, I've been doing it for so long that, you know, I do it myself. And I talk to Justin. He gives me some ideas. Jay Cutler lives here. I go by his house, and we talk. He turned me on to the blood type diet, you know. But he's an O, so it's a lot easier for him. I'm an A. Yeah, that's like the worst. You know, it's kind of like, it tells you to be more vegetarian, you know. But like I said, like I eat more nuts now because of that blood type diet.
Right.
I stay away from. I don't have any red meat. You know, I know you're big on red meat. I used to be big on red meat, but I don't eat red meat anymore. You know, I mean, so I got some tweaks from that. Of course, you know, they don't think you should have, for my blood type, I shouldn't eat that much protein, which, you know, I can't not eat protein. You know, I have that protein six meals a day.
Yeah. I gotta tell you that. I think that whole blood type diet is so arbitrary, but I think what you are eating...
Yeah, I think so too. I think a lot of it's crap, especially for what we're trying to accomplish.
Right.
But like some of the things that they say, like, you know, your blood type has, you know, maybe allergies to certain type of things. That's not the right term for it, but the best way to put it, allergies, you know, maybe you should stay away from these things. So I basically just stay away from some of the things that they stay away from. But, you know, I don't follow 100% like Jay does. He said that's how he won the Olympia. When he won the Olympia, he followed a blood type diet. And when he stopped following, he has done as well, so he's back on it.
Well, we'll have to see how he does at the Olympia this year. You know, that only time will tell. Now, I hear you're training at Randy Couture's gym in Vegas. How's that going?
Yeah, training's going real good there. I'm training real hard. I used to have to go out to AKA to train in San Jose. But right now, it's a real good, I have a real good camp. In Vegas, have a lot of good guys. Have a lot of good lefty sparring, which is what I need. George is the lefty southpaw, so you know I have everything I need right here. It's good to stay home. You know, have my wife cook my food for me, have all my meals, and you know I know the area, and it's just more comfortable.
Now, Phil, I know some fighters who train like 6-8 hours a day. What's your training like?
I used to kind of do that, but you know, it's overtraining. I got my training, a lot of it from the guys that train at the Olympic Training Center, and my old coach, you know, was an Olympic, you know, hopeful, and he's the assistant coach for Cale Sanderson, who was an Olympic gold medalist, the greatest wrestler ever in college, and you know they developed programs they do at the Olympic Training Center where I train twice a day on Monday and Tuesday. Wednesday I take off, but it's an active rest day where I do something that's not fighting involved. You know, it could be something like basketball, which I don't play. I don't do that, but that's just able that they use. I've been doing like hot yoga and then like, you know, just an elliptical for like a half hour, just something to break up the monotony of training. And then Tuesday, Wednesday, I mean, Thursday, Friday, twice a day again, Saturday once a day, and then Sunday completely off.
Now, what's one of those typical training days like?
Okay, Monday, I wake up, I go to the gym. I go to the gym at 9. I wake up. I lift off 40 minutes from the gym. I go to the gym at 9. I do strength and conditioning, hard strength and conditioning, and then I do mitts with my kickboxing coach, Sean Thomas. I do like Muay Thai type fighting, you know, mitts, kicks. Then I go home. I rest. I go back at 4. And I do, you know, what they call the pro practice, which is, you know, the coaches organize. We, you know, go over ground, stand up, whatever we're doing that day. We just, like, you know, incorporate everything in fighting. So, like, a fight training. And then I go home, done. On Tuesday, I'll go in the morning at 11 to a different gym. Robert Dreisdale is just a guy, like a world champion, you know, four-time world champion, an American guy that moved to Brazil, won all kinds of titles, and now he's back. He lives in Vegas. He opened up his own gym, so I train there in the morning, work on all my ground, do all my ground training, go home. Then Tuesday night, I go back, and that's all sparring. I set up my sparring. I make it to a gym. I have to, right now, there's no one having a training for a fight, so I take the cage at 4 o'clock, and when the other fighters are preparing, you know, doing their training, I bring my spar partners. I'll spar four or five minute rounds with left-handed fighters. Right now I bring in Dewey Cooper, who fought Nick McKay, the American K-1. You know, he's an accomplished kickboxer. I think he's 15-0-1 drawer in boxing. He's he was Derek Harmon's spar partner. He just beat Tarver. So, you know, he's a real good boxer. He's a southpaw kickboxer, so I spar with him, and also with the guy Sean Tompkins, who's a southpaw, and there's a couple other young guys that are lefties, so absolutely lefty sparring, get used to the left-handed style.
Phil, let me interrupt you for a second, because I was watching the press conference for this fight with Joe Riggs, and you made a funny comment. You said that, I guess your publicist didn't know what a southpaw was?
My agent. I think he did, but I just gave him a little dig. Just felt like busting his balls. He was pissing me off. He wasn't coming through on my sponsor. I'm saying, come on, dude. You know, I have the best body in the sport, and I see all these guys, and they have supplement sponsors, and they don't fight on, you know, big shows, or they fight on big shows, and they don't look like they work out much. You know what I mean? Even like Chuck Liddell, I'm good friends with the guy, but I would take Zion's not to look like Chuck Liddell, and if they told me to take the drink, just drink, and you're gonna look like Chuck Liddell, I wouldn't do it. You know, I wouldn't take it, no matter how tough I was. So, you know, I'm like, well, what's the problem? Why can't you get me, you know, a supplement sponsor? I was like one of the first guys ever to have supplement sponsors in the sport before it was so mainstream. I had Trip Spa, Twin Lab, Medirex, and now. Now I can't seem to get one. I don't understand. So I was just busting his balls and give him a dig. You know, said give me a southpaw. Said they know what it was. It's gotta know what it is.
Now you also said when they asked you what you were going to do to Joe Riggs, you said you were going to basically, what'd you say? Tell us.
I'm going to bust him up. You know, I'm going to bust him up. It's up to him. You know, how long is it going to last? You know, I'm going to put the pressure on him and break him. I'm gonna pound him the fuck out. You know, I'm not in here, you know, to be friends. I'm gonna be a nice guy. I'm gonna make it ugly. I'm gonna hurt the kid. So I'm gonna put on a show. Show everyone in the world that I'm for real. 130 pounds. I didn't win just for my last three fights. You know, because they weren't top notch guys. I'm fighting the top notch guy who fought for a UFC title, and you know, he's in his prime. He's 26 years old. You know, I'm gonna knock his ass out.
Well, Phil, you're 3-0 now since dropping the weight class. What do you see, you know, in the future of the welterweight division? Your future?
Well, I think right now Nick Diaz in Strikeforce, you know, he's the top guy. Nick Diaz, Jake Shields, you know, was, but he just moved up to 185. He's fighting Robbie Lawler, so it's wide open. But I mean, Nick Diaz beat, you know, a lot of the best fighters in the world, and then the UFC. You know, that's easy, hands down. You know, the winner of the Diego Alves GSP fight. I mean, there's you know, those are number one, number two, and there's you know, a far third. There's no one really close to third. you know, both those guys demolished everyone.
Now, what can you earn in a fight like this when you assuming you win?
I mean, this fight is like a, you know, just purse to win is you know, $60,000. You know, I got to win $40,000 a show, 20 more win bonus, and I got a knockout bonus, which will be like $8,000. You know, finish bonus, knockout, submission. So I mean, it's not a big payday, but you know, like GSP and, you know, Matt Hughes, you know, those guys are making millions of dollars. I mean, they're getting a percentage of pay per view.
Wow.
You know, they're getting a dollar or two on the pay per view, and the show money is you know, $250,000 or more. So I mean, the guys now making money. When I first got into the sport, you know, T. Ortiz was the champion. He was making $100,000, and that seemed like wow. You know, it was a lot of money. Now, a lot of guys are millionaires. Like Dana White said, the economy is bad, but the UFC made more millionaires in the last you know, 4 or 5 years than anybody.
Now,
which isn't true because baseball, football. But
speaking of Dana White, would you ever go back to the UFC if he'd take you?
Oh, he would take me in a heartbeat. You know, we're real good friends. But you know, I want to go in for the money. You know, I don't want to go in and work my way back up. You know, in the UFC, they have a pay scale and a pay structure, and I don't really want to go in there and fight, you know, three or four bullshit guys and bullshit fights and work my way up right now. I want to make some real money. You know, there's a big difference between, you know, $60,000 and 20. You know, to win and to work my way back up. You know, I want to come in as a Strikeforce champion, come into the UFC as a champion, where I'm going to, you know, walk into a fight with GSP or Alves or somebody big or a number one contender and make, you know, $100,000 and get a piece of the pay-per-view. You know, it's it's about money at the end of the day, fighting in these other organizations.
How do you think you do against, you know, Thiago Silva or GSP, George St. Pierre?
I think good matchup. You know, I think, you know, I'm as fast as those guys. I've showed that before. You know, my hand speed, you know, is second to none. And, you know, I'm coming down. I'm strong. You know, GSP, how physical is everybody? You know, he's a great wrestler, but, you know, I'm a wrestler too. You know, I wrestled my whole life too. I was just an All-American in college. I could wrestle. I think I match up good with him. You know, I hit a lot harder than him. I got a lot more punch and power. And, you know, the only way he can win, beat me, is, you know, to hold me down for 5 rounds and not get clipped. You know, and before that was a problem because I would get tired later in the fight. But now, you know, at this weight, it's a lot easier carrying, you know, 15, 20 pounds less muscle. You know, I have a lot better cardio now, and I've changed my training and stuff. My cardio is a lot better now. I like my chances against anybody at 170, you know, easily.
I think a lot of bodybuilders can relate to you, Phil, because they, you know, bodybuilders tend to like the UFC, the MMA fighting, and you know, they see that you are a former bodybuilder. You know, the only rap that I've seen most of your fights, and I think you're probably one of the most exciting fighters in the whole organization, all the organizations to watch fight. The knack against you was that you tend to gas out if you have to go more than a couple rounds. What have you done to overcome that?
Conditioning, the number one thing I've done, and coming from a bodybuilder, being a bodybuilder, which is the hardest thing to do, is, you know, give up that muscle. You know, I felt small, 185. I mean, you remember me back in New York, you know, I used to walking around the beach 230 pounds.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I used to like walk around Jones Beach 230 pounds, you know. So I hated being 185, but at least in the off season I could balloon up to, like, you know, 205, 212 even, you know, get on the hand, 215, but I'd still be a big guy, you know. So you know, coming from that bodybuilder mentality, you know, losing that weight was hard to do. I could never see myself being 170. You know, I wrestled 177 my senior year in high school, you know, but that was a different time. I was lifting a lot of weight then, you know, and doing different training and trying to be big, so I had to change my mentality a lot. But losing muscle, you know, you have a lot better cardio. The training always is the hard work. Now it's just you get better results when you don't have that muscle. I mean, like you said, Lance Armstrong is a perfect example.
Mm. Well, Phil, I want to wish you the best of luck this coming Saturday. We're going to be rooting for you. Is it going to be on TV? Can we watch this?
June 6th. It'll be on
June 6th.
It'll be on Showtime. It'll be on Showtime for sure, you know.
When does it start?
I think 7 o'clock over here, so what? 10 over by you.
10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and it's on Showtime, and it's Strike Forces. Do they have a special name for this particular match?
No, but I mean, it's a superstar card. I mean, if you're not a Phil Baroni, Joe Riggs fan, which you should be, you're not a real fan. But, you know, Andre Arlovsky, former UFC heavyweight champion, is fighting on the card.
Uh-huh.
Jake Shields, Robbie Lawler. You know, Robbie Lawler was a... Me and him would come up together in the UFC, knocking everybody out with, you know, the Bash Brothers, they call us. You know, Robbie Lawler's on a card. Nick Diaz is fighting Scott Smith. You know, everybody knows Scott Smith. Those legendary fights on CBS against Robbie Lawler. I mean, it's a huge card. I mean, Cyborg's fighting on a card. You know, that's the girl that, you know, Gina Carano's nemesis.
Yeah.
You know, so... She's built like, you know, a woman bodybuilder. I mean, really, without a doubt. So, you know, she's on a card. So, I mean, it's a great card if you want to check it out. I mean,
yeah, it's free.
Way better than this last UFC card, and it's free.
All right. Well, Phil, good luck. And like I said, we're rooting for you. You're from New York, and we New Yorkers. And best of luck, man.
Yeah, thanks a lot, man.
All right, John. It was a great show. We got all our multitude of guests on tonight from all walks of life, and you know, I really enjoyed the Ronnie interview, even though he was like half asleep. You know, he's so honest. I love talking to people to just exude honesty out of themselves.
Well, he was half asleep. We woke him up. What a good sport, too, man. I mean, God, he goes through this trauma. You know, and you could just tell by listening to him, he was deeply disturbed,
bummed out
by the whole thing. You know, he's there. It's a Sunday. He's sleeping. You know, probably depressed about the whole thing. And he gets out of bed to hang out with us. And I really want to thank him from the bottom of my heart. That was really a nice thing for him to do, to come on with us.
Without a doubt. And of course, Conley's always informative. But you know, we're out of time, and Jeff has given me the cutoff signal. So I'd like to thank our guests for tonight: Scott Connolly, Phil Baroni, and of course, Ronnie Coleman, 8-time Mr. Olympia. Until next week, remember, with Heavy Muscle Radio,
the truth hurts.
Heavy Muscle Radio is a presentation of RxMuscle.com, the truth in bodybuilding. Tune in next week at the same time for another round with Dave Palumbo and John Romano, only on Heavy Muscle Radio.